prepare for the worst, because it looks like the worst is happening. Now, I've studied nuclear reactors.
The test of the emergency broadcast system.
And I'm not trying to scare people with the radiation fallout. There is undoubtedly radiation coming this way. You know, people in the major cities of Utah and Idaho, that's where the jet stream dumps in.
Recording
they got stuff will blow up the whole solar system, according to my intel. And I'm not trying to scare people. Massive meltdown, massive meltdown, massive meltdown. Boom! Not trying to scare people. Massive meltdown. Better off with the fictitious Godzilla coming out of the water and attacking. I mean, that place is on fire. The meltdown occurred. This is a very serious situation. It did go Chernobyl.
Okay.
Folks, cool.
Hey, hey, what's going on? It's March 9th, it's 2020. Up, boop, 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 boop. Yeah, how y'all doing?
So how are you guys doing?
Didn't go as smoothly as I thought it would, but anyway, I'm here, and it's Monday night, and it's 8:42, and it's March 9th, and it's 2020, and this is Hoaxbusters Call. Who's in the chat? We got Square Circle, and we got guests for Chris 7511, and pending is Rich Destroy. CH says, hello, hello all. How's it going, CH? Yeah, man. Glad you're out. Glad everybody came out. So what is the quote you might be asking yourself right now as I navigate over to the quote as I turn this here off and then I go over to where the quote is and then I read it, and it says, of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It would be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep. His cupidity may at some point be satiated. Cupidity means greed. That's a word I had to look up. But those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience. They may be more likely to go to heaven, yet at the same time likelier to make a hell on earth. This very kindness stings with intolerable insult. To be cured, quote-unquote, against one's will and cured of states which we may not regard as disease is to be put on a level of those who have not yet reached the age of reason or those who never will, to be classified with infants, imbeciles, and domestic animals. And that quote is attributed to C.S. Lewis. And I would have to say, yeah, that's pretty spot on, man. The real tyranny is with this good intentions for everybody, the stuff you hear constantly now. It's like, what's the greater good for everybody? What's the greater good for us? What's the greater good for the planet? And this is going to encompass every aspect of your life, from your food choices to your clothing choices to your car, how you get around. Everything is being revised and turned on its head in the name of environmentalism. And, man, I'm telling you, looking at this recent thing with this so-called coronavirus and all that, it's like, this has got to be one of the most agenda-packed psychological operations to date. I mean, they got everything and the kitchen sink in this one. It's absolutely incredible. I just heard something on, I was listening to Boiler Room earlier, and Jay Dyer's on there, and this guy Hesher and his wife, and they have a Primal Edge Health guy on there, and some other pertinent guests, interesting conversations, and enjoy listening to that from time to time. But it was bringing up something about this coronavirus and saying that over in China they have a different cults, and they're always trying to like stamp down on these cults. From what I understand, I don't live in China, but that's what I heard. And then there was a recent story that just came out with is it South Korea? There's like some sort of cult out of there, and they had a member of their cult from, that's a member of the same cult from China, go visit South Korea and then pass the infection along. And then they announce that, oh, well, we had to bring criminal charges because they're spreading this virus. And I'm thinking as I'm hearing this, that is a completely contrived story, 100%. Because, you know, like here's this thing that they're saying about this whole virus that's allegedly spreading. And we've been over this before with the swine flu. I remember this pretty distinctly not so many years ago. My sister-in-law was diagnosed with swine flu. So it came up in the conversations. It came up on the calls. And conversation I had with her was like, well, you know, how do they determine it's swine flu? Like, what is it? Like, what is it? Like, what is a swine flu? And she just basically told me it's like, oh, it's a real bad case of the flu. And around that time, I was trying to locate this audio that I had recorded this call to the CDC. And I asked some pointed questions about the swine flu. And essentially what I was trying to get around to is like, well, so somebody comes into the doctor and they're not feeling well. Like, you know, most people, like, you know, if they're really, really feeling terrible, they'll go to the doctor. I guess that would exclude Logan Blake, because if you listen to the debate I had with Logan Blake Vegan, he said that's invalid to base anything on feelings. So I guess you wouldn't even go to the doctor even if you're feeling like absolute shit, because you can't base the level of your health by any kind of discernible metric that you can subjectively make on your own. You have to defer to doctors. So how do you even go to the doctor in the first place? But anyway, sidetrack there. But I called the CDC. I said, hey, what do you do to determine that this is the swine flu? How do you know? CH says, you got to have a study. Yeah, you have to have a study to convince a vegan. So, I mean, they have to run a study on, let's say, example, Logan, if he's kind of absolutely is just bedridden sick. And they have to run some tests on him before he makes a determination that he's sick. So how does he call in sick to work? I don't understand. I feel like shit. And the boss says, well, Logan, have you got any blood work done? You know you're sick, actually. You better get your ass into work, son. And he's, well, you got a good point. I haven't had any lab analysis on my blood. I better hurry on into work. But anyway, yeah, I was kind of aggravated by that whole debate. But anyway, the nice lady on the phone told me that, no, they don't test or check anything other than the symptoms. And I said, well, you know, what's the symptoms? So it's like the flu. I said, okay, thanks. Thank you. And that was kind of the end of the discussion. And basically, and then I just posted something that Richard D. from Arizona sent me, and it was Corbett from Corbett Report, and he reminded me of what I was saying 2 years ago with the swine flu, because he's gone down the same avenue of thought, apparently, and was kind of coming to the same conclusion, like, yeah, what is this thing that they're telling us is out there and it's infecting people and they don't really test for it? Admittedly, don't test for that specifically. They tell us that the cases is no more than what the normal cases of death would be from illness if it's just the run-of-the-mill flu, and then they don't have any kind of test to distinguish that from the regular flu, and the symptoms are the same. Yeah, so that's some good questions there. I think some relevant questions that I think are important in relation to this whole thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being freaking anti-science silly, which I do that sometimes. I just go full anti-science and deny science and don't defer to the experts. And there's a real interesting, I was trying to pay attention to as close as I could. I was busy earlier today as I was listening to a post that Adam Miller made. And thanks, man, for posting on to the blog. That was really interesting, the guy, what he was going into, talking about viruses. And then we think we know what this is all about, and they have the pictures of them on the internet. You can look at a virus, have photos of them. But they're computer graphics. But then, like, yeah, okay, what are we talking about? What exactly are viruses? Like, what is it? And I was speaking with a regular earlier in a private conversation, and it was on this subject. And then it's like, well, you know, you go to work, you get sick because it's going around the office, you come home, and then, like, your family can get sick too. And it's like something there, yeah. Contagious, they call it contagious. But, what does that exactly mean, and what is going on in reality? That's a totally different question. And then there's lots of questions. It just opens up a whole box of questions that I don't have answers to. But, you know, looking into the stuff, and there's only so much stuff you can look into over a course of a lifetime. And this is one thing that I've been looking into off and on. Square Circle says viruses come from NASA, apparently. Well, then, okay, so that's going to set me up for what I'm going to go into, which is some pretty wild stuff if you think that this kind of apophenia, they call it, some people call it. It's like, Chris, you just seeing patterns and things, man. You know why? Because you got a mental disorder. You got a major malfunction, boy. You don't know what you're talking about. You're talking crazy shit on that. I heard you on there one time. I listened to you, and you's talking all kinds of crazy shit, like the government doesn't know everything that's going on, and you don't believe what they say, and you don't believe science, dummy. But I think I have this here worked out. Maybe I'll leave it up to the listener to draw their own conclusions. But this is something that is easy to check out. Unlike flat Earth, well, like we were told about flat Earth, because I'm sure a lot of people, I myself sound like a flat earther, and of course have been associated with flat earthers. I don't believe the Earth is flat, but then I get lumped in, and then I get accused by people of not being open-minded in the whole conspiracy scene, but you know, I'd rather kind of focus in on stuff that is like undeniable, and I like it when it's something that is easy for anybody like that's listening right now can get confirmation on what I'm about to talk about. This is the stuff I really like to go into. It's like where I have in front of me right now a set of undeniable facts that are prima facie. I mean, they're facts on their face. So there's no debating this. Now, the implications of it and what they mean and your interpretation of it, that's a whole complete other thing. And I like to talk about, what it amount to, like epistemology, like what's reasonable to believe and why, what leads people to their belief systems. Been hitting a lot. Before I took the hiatus and stuff like that, I was on this vegan topic, and I'm still am on this vegan topic because it ties into so many things. And one of the really interesting things about it, it's that from my perspective, it's like there's this growing number of people out there who are identifying as this, they're adopting this vegan label, and there's so many connotations to it as far as like your environmentalist stance and your belief in global warming, your belief in so-called science, and your belief in that consensus, a scientific consensus, can actually in fact make something a incontrovertible fact of reality, that no person in their right mind would try to go against. That's really what I'm talking about, and I guess like it's pretty much primarily tied at the hip with the global warming, fear mongering and stuff, and this virus stuff is right in line with this. It all is one part of a part of a larger picture, which is the new world order religion. I guess I've heard people characterize it that way. I really don't like assigning labels to things, because there's like a lot of association stuff that will go with a particular label that may not necessarily be appropriate. But since through usage of a term like New World Order, then it brings in a lot. Like, what does that even mean? Well, there's probably a better way to look at it, which is like I brought up this analogy before, where it's like if you're looking at the system that we're in, sort of like the way that an organizational culture is set up within a corporation, and how everyone kind of like falls in line without following under some expressly stated dictates and rules. It's a culture. It's a corporate culture. This is something in sociology is well understood, like that different organizations have their own different particular culture, and then within the culture of, like, say Google, for example, like they talk about how for example, some individual that worked there decided that, hey, identify, and this is what I heard. I don't know if it's true or not. You don't know nowadays, but they identify as a cat. They needed a cat box in the office so that they can go do their business, and that's they demanded that, and everybody had to kind of like acquiesce to it because, hey, this is the new Brave New World, and everybody identifies. And yeah, but in this corporate culture, you follow along with what the top. It's obviously from the top down. Well, the same thing goes for the wider culture. We live in sort of like a big sort of, I've heard it described as an outdoor insane asylum. That's a good description of it. Or like the Charles Fort called it the human ranch. I like that, human ranch. It kind of is very descriptive. If you go look up the definition of civilization on Wikipedia, it's the domestication of both humans and animals. So we're, you know, a domesticated product. And we undergo certain periodic upgrades to the system, and we're going definitely through a rapid succession of these right now, like conditioning processes, and then also with these accompanying what I think I've maybe coined this. I've heard it used in other contexts, but it's a compliance ritual. I've heard it used in child psychology, where that's interesting. But they do this to the masses, and we just recently went through one, which is daylight savings time. It's like, set the clocks for. Why? It's like, well, don't worry about it. Just do it, because you're going to start looking into it, and you're going to get really confused, because you're going to get a lot of different answers from a lot of different sources. I ran into rave that raved on that in the past. I'm kind of over it pretty much to a large extent, and the way I kind of like dealt with it is to like get rid of every clock that I have to manually set, because there's no point in it. Just look at your, if I'm going to have a freaking phone and I need to know what time it is, I'll look at the freaking phone. I got a clock on the wall and like the battery ran out, and I was just like, well, you know what, I'm just not even going to bother with it. It's just decorative anyway, you know, at this point. Maybe that's too big of a concession I'm making there, as far as I should stand my ground on principle. And then I don't know. I mean, what do you do? But it's compliance rituals, and taxation is another one, because there's no point. There's no real reason for them to take taxes from you. People that work for the government, they take tax. So they pay people that work for the government, and then they take some of it back, and then it's like you got to pay. Why? Because it's a compliance ritual. That's what it is. It's to keep in front of your face, because the government really, in actuality, is just it's an abstraction. It's an abstract concept. So you have to always have these things that are part of our activity and our normal routine that constantly, continually reinforce and reify this idea of this abstraction called government. And, you know, if you look at our system that way, I think you can have deeper insights into what's going on. When you see something like these, it's like they come out of regular schedule. They have, because I was just thinking about, I don't know if I mentioned it on one of the past calls. I might have or not, because a lot of things come to mind, and I try to write some stuff down. And some, but I was like wondering, like, what's going on? We haven't had a virus outbreak in a while. It was like, it's been a couple of years since, I think it was like the last one was, I got them down here, and this is what I'm going to talk about. But yeah. Let's go into it. But, you know, I was going into the human farm and the system we live in, because the way I'm looking at this sort of thing is that, so we're going through a scaremongering campaign right now, which is basically can be looked at as a big advertising campaign push. Like, you know, you have some, like a product that our beloved controllers want to get us to get on board with, then you're going to go through this, you know, series of theatrical plays that are portrayed as real. They carry this out in the form of drills. China, I don't know, man. They're not really on top of their game with a lot of this stuff. It kind of reminds me of the the time that they tried to do the spacewalk, and it's like, man, they gun decked that shit, man. Like, the guy's like on the, he's, oh, here I am in space, everybody, and they're filming him, and he's got this big watch on, and it's like, yeah, you're reflecting the studio lights in there, goofus. Get the, it's like, man, the Chinese shit. They need to stop and just let the Americans do that, and then we could send them our fake footage, and they could just freaking watermark that shit, dude. Hire it out to the Americans and do it. Chinese, golly, man, don't try to do everything on your own. Yeah, stop with your brand of fakery. It just sucks. You know, we got water bubbles, and because, you know, it's really actually, spacewalks are actually done in the neutral buoyancy lab. We talked about that before, and they have water bubbles. But that can be, they explain it away. It's, oh, that's ice crystals that look, they're and their mode of trajectory just happens to look identical to what a water bubble would be. They asked, some guy put a, it was a flat earther, but it was like, and it pissed me off because it was a flat earther, but it was like, why don't people just stick with the facts? Like the video on that's online that shows the bubbles, and he asked one of the astronauts about it, and he it was like a moment of extreme awkwardness for a second, and then it was like, oh, you're one of those flat earthers, blah, 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 and they started jeering the guy. But, yeah, on the human ranch, back on the human ranch, we have coronavirus. What, I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. What does it even mean? Tom sent me something. I was like, oh, yeah, coronavirus is an anagram for carnivore. I said, yep, that totally, yeah, it's probably a subconscious message there because they've tied it into meat. Cave Monk Dave sent me something about, I got to go look it up. Something along that lines, too. I was trying to remember. It'll pop in my head in a second. But so here we go. I got sent this link about television series and viral outbreaks from Topeka, that's her screen username, and I was like, okay, yeah, I do need to check this out. So here we go. I'll start at the top. These aren't necessarily in chronological order, but I'll just read it out as I have them here. The Aral smallpox incident was a July 30th, 1971 outbreak of the viral disease, which occurred as a result of a field test at a Soviet biological weapons facility in an island in the Aral Sea. The incident sickened 10 people, of whom 3 died, and it came to widespread public notice only in 2002. Well, 2002 is when the SARS, if I'm not mistaken, so-called outbreak occurred. But, you know, with that said, so it wasn't widespread knowledge, but still at the same time, there are going to be people that are going to be in the know, and there's going to be your so-called officials that were aware of this alleged smallpox incident. But anyway, 1971, the same year, the Andromeda strain was the basis for a film of the same name directed by Robert Wise and featuring Arthur Hill as Stone, James Olsen as Hall, Kate Reed as Levitt, and blah, blah, blah. That was the book that came out in 1971. And it was written by Michael Crichton. the Andromeda strain. So yeah, that so they have the book that was a popular book that turned into was later made into a popular film called The Andromeda Strain. It's about a virus from outer space. And that's what Tom alluded to earlier. That's like, do these come from NASA? Well, if you go try to look up some stuff about viruses coming from outer space, you're sure to pull up multiple articles. John just sent me one recently. I need to post that. So that's that. The 2008 Bird flu outbreak in West Bengal is an occurrence of avian influenza in West Bengal, India, that began on January 16, 2008. That's the H5N1. That very year, Blindness was a 2008 English-language thriller film and an adaptation of the 1995. That year is going to come back up again multiple times and during the course of this conversation, but it was by a Portuguese author, José Sama Majo, about a society suffering from epidemic of blindness. Huh, that's interesting little metaphorical twist in there, isn't it? And that came out the same year that H1N1. There's also another one from 2008, and I'll get to that. There was a TV series called, this is in Britain, that came out in 1975 and went from 1975 to 1977 called The Survivors. It's a post-apocalyptic fiction drama television series created by Terry Nation and produced by Terry Dudley, a BBC broadcast from 1975 to 1977. It concerns the plight of a group of people who survive an apocalyptic plague pandemic, which is accidentally released by the Chinese scientists and quickly spread across the world via air travel, referred to as the death, quote-unquote. The plague kills approximately 4,999 out of every 5,000 human beings. Like, why do they put it that way? Okay, why not 9 out of 10? I mean, on the planet within a matter of weeks of being released. Ooh, holy crap, that's a bad one. But that series... Okay, from 1975 to 1977. During that time, we had the 19... This is supposedly real life now. We had the 1976 swine flu outbreak, which the influenza A virus type, subtype H1N1 at Fort Dix, New Jersey, caused one death, hospitalized 13, led to a mass immunization program. Yeah, they had a mass immunization program in 1976, President Gerald Ford, I believe, and he was on TV getting his shot. Hey, everybody, you better get shot. Swine flu. Respiratory arrest, death, immunization program was ended after approximately 25% of the population of the United States had been administered the vaccine. Why did they stop at 25%? How's that going to do anything? But anyway, so maybe you see a pattern emerging already. You know, a TV series, a movie comes out, and then an outbreak happens. Then I just talked about 1995 when... What was that 1995 reference? The movie they made in 2008 was based on a novel about a virus that came out in 1995. In 1995, there was an outbreak of Ebola viral hemorrhagic fever in Zaire on May 6, 1995. Health authorities notified U.S. Embassy of Zaire of an outbreak of viral hemorrhagic fever in Kikwit, Zaire, population 400,000, city located 240 miles east of Kinshasa. The World Health Organization, CDC, were invited by the government of Zaire to participate in the investigation of the outbreak. This report summarizes plenty of blah, 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 and I got the report there. And I'll put this together in a post. So that, as the outbreak in Zaire is going on, Outbreak is a 1995 American medical disaster film directed by Wolfgang Peterson and based on Richard Preston's nonfiction book, The Hot Zone. The film focuses on an outbreak of a fictional Ebola-like virus in Matoba in Zaire, and later a small town in the United States. It's primarily set in the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease and the Centers for Disease Control. Oh, they had it in the movie. Yeah, everything lining up exactly with what supposedly was going on in real life at the same year in some remote kind of region in Africa. I mean, how coincidental you want to get with this. It was released, this film was released in March 10th, 1995, was a box office success. And it was Kevin Spacey was in it. He won two awards for his performance. I think Dustin Hoffman was in it, too. It's like a major Hollywood film that happens to come out right when a viral outbreak was coming out. And then that same year as well, 12 Monkeys came out. And that was another... I thought that movie was pretty good. I liked that one. That was with Bruce Willis, and he's a time traveler, and it's about viruses and so on. It's about, okay, let me refresh this. I put more in here, but it's not showing up quite yet. But 12 Monkeys is another film that came out. So the main character, Cole, he arrives in Baltimore in 1990, not 1996 as planned. And that's interesting, too. Like that's the setting of the movie is supposed to take place around this period. Da, da, da. And then he's arrested, hospitalized, mental hospital, diagnosis of Dr. Catherine Riley, and there he encounters Jeffrey Goins, a mental patient with fanatical environmentalist and anti-corporatist views. Cole is interviewed by a panel of doctors. He tries to explain that a virus outbreak has already happened and nobody can change it. After an escape attempt, Cole is sedated and locked in a cell, disappears moments later, wakes back up in 2035. So he wakes up in 2035 and the world's like wiped out, and there's just like, it's just like wild animals going through the cities and stuff, and everything, everybody's dead. And then the plot of the film ties in animal rights activists, and then they are suspected of being the ones that released it, but it turns out it was actually some high up governmental guy that, you know, went quote unquote rogue. Some guy that worked in a bio lab that decided, oh, I'm going to take this and release it. That was what the film was about. 1995 also was the Oklahoma City bombing. Okay, moving on. Does anybody have any comments in the chat? Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. Kalita's here. Hi, Kalita. Oh, Adam, yeah, call in, man. Yeah, I got some more guests filtering in. So we'll continue. This is going to really belabor the point because there's so many examples. Oh, this coincidence, Chris. Well, yeah, okay. So 28 Days Later is a 2002 British post-apocalyptic horror film directed by Danny Boyle, written by Alex Garland, starring Clint Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, on and on. The plot depicts the breakdown of society following the accidental release of a highly contagious virus and focuses on the struggle of four survivors, Murphy, Harris, Burns, and Gleason, to cope with the destruction of the life they once knew while evading those infected by the virus. So this is the beginning of the zombie movie craze that happened in the 2000s, early 2000s. So that movie came out in 2002, and then we had the 2002 to 2004 SARS outbreak. So they come out with a major film, and then they come out with a real true life outbreak involving severe acute respiratory syndrome. This one originated in Foshan, China. November 2002, over 8,000 people were infected, and at least 774 died worldwide. It's like, I think more people probably died from gagging on their toothbrush than that. I mean, talking about, like, how many billion people on the planet? As a percentage of people that are dying, like, 774 out of... Like, they're saying the coronavirus, the current hobgoblin that we're being terrorized with has killed 2,000 worldwide. That's like, yeah, more people choked to death on those finger sandwich toothpicks where they got the fancy frill on the end. That specific toothpick, probably more people die worldwide every year choking on those than have died from the coronavirus. You know, it's like, it's absurd. There's 28 days later. Oh, an interesting side note. About 28 days later, it said much of the filming took place prior to the September 11th attacks. And in the auto commentary, Boyles notes that the parallel between the missing persons, quote-unquote, flyers seen at the beginning of the film and similar flyers posted in New York City in the wake of the attack. So they had a scene out of 9/11 in this movie, too, by the way, which, of course, is totally coincidental. Yeah, because don't most movies have missing persons flyers tacked up everywhere? And when you're talking about disaster movies? Oh, no, you're saying just in this one, it just happened to come out in 9/11? Okay, well, yeah, coincidence. Man, yeah, it's hard not to get sarcastic. Okay, 2009, swine flu, second of the two pandemics involving H1N1, the first one being the 1918-20 Spanish flu epidemic. So what this thing like lays dormant for, what is it, nearly 100 years and then pops back up, starts to fade. What are they trying to tell us here? It's nonsense. So that was 2009. That we have the swine flu, and then of course in 2009 we have a sci-fi drama thriller called Pandemic. A veterinarian, again with, you know, tying into animals, finds herself in the midst of a horrifying pandemic where humans and animals are stricken with a horrible contagious disease. Must pair up with an eccentric conspiracy theorist and blah blah blah. Some reason that got clipped off, but yeah, you can go check that out if you want. Okay. Here's another one. There was 2016 movie that came out. I have a link to it, but I don't have the blurb. So I'm going to open this link. Oh, now, where is it? Okay. So, you had... Come on. It's not letting me scroll. Well, that's irritating enough. Okay, so yeah, I think you got the point by now. And you may say, well, okay, Chris, they're always coming out with virus movies, so what's the big deal? It's like, yeah, there is a strong correlation here with these movies and the actual. So the 2016, they had a movie called Pandemic. Was it action, horror, sci-fi? That came out, and then there was another film called 93 Days that came out in 2016, and in the 2016 we had the Zika virus epidemic. So there's that. Yeah, so it's like every instance that I saw of a movie coming out, unless it's something real obscure on TV or something, there was a coinciding real life, in quotes, outbreak. Yeah. So we come to the coronavirus, supposedly, allegedly, here in 2020 is what we're looking at. Here's a link to a story about Netflix quietly released a 6-episode docuseries called Pandemic, How to Prevent an Outbreak on Tuesday, right in time for the alarming spread of the... It's hard not to laugh. It's hard to get through. This is so mind-numbing. Like, it's right in time for the alarming spread of the Wuhan coronavirus. In Pandemic, quote-unquote, viewers meet the heroes on the front lines of the battle against influenza and learn the efforts to stop the next global outbreak. Come on. The series summary in Netflix reads, Pandemic creates urgency for the need to prepare against epidemics by following several viruses and diseases around the globe that have been done... and what's being done to battle them. As scientists fight underfunding and research and healthcare. Oh, we not got enough funding. Anti-vaxxers. Oh, the anti-vaxxers. Anti-vaxxers and then misinformation and political red tape, including unvaccinated migrants in the U.S. border. Wow. Oh, wow. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I had another little blurb cut out of that. Where did it go? Where somebody quotes this? It's in this link. Hopefully, I don't get absolutely obliterated with ads here. Yeah, this is worth a read. I should maybe kind of go through this and read some of this. New York Post about this docuseries. Come on. I'm trying to get reader view, and it's just spinning. Just give me it here. All right. Netflix quietly. Yeah, we said that already. Creates urgency. Dr. Dennis Carroll, the United States Agency for International Development Emergent Threats Unit Director, says in a show, people should be most scared of influenza and respiratory viruses, claiming that alarmists are more concerned with Ebola, which only infected 28,600 people worldwide, than H1N1, which has killed 151,700 to 575,400 people worldwide, according to CDC. That's a kind of wide gap there, isn't it? 151,700 to 570. That's like a 400,000 people difference. Well, somewhere in that range. All right, whatever. Dr. Sierra Madad, the senior director of New York City Health and Hospital Special Pathogens Program, which helps develop public health strategy to ready the Big Apple for major disease, also makes an appearance in the show. What do you want to bet that that's going to shape up here in the near future, like something centered in New York? That wouldn't be too surprising, would it? In the show, my dad, this is the docuseries on Netflix, by the way, I'm talking about, that came out like 2 months before this so-called coronavirus outbreak, as they're doing like a worldwide or a multi-nation drill exercise called something 201, with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and all those cast of characters. Influenza is very hard to predict. It takes one person, one host, to lead to a pandemic, Madid said. The episode title serve almost... This is what I wanted to read. Oh, man, I got to hold it together. Then we can move on to caller enters. The episode title serve almost as a guide for panicked viewers, telling those watching that, quote, pandemic is now, quote, don't seek, don't hide, unquote. This is the chapter titles of the series. Prayers might work, quote unquote, and don't stop now, quote unquote. The show is produced by 0.0 Productions, best known for making various other docuseries for Anthony Bourdain, another Netflix hit docuseries, Broken and Rotten. Ain't that nice? All right. So there you go. There you have it. Apophenia kicking in. Apophenia is when you see patterns and things that aren't really noteworthy because you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. Like you see, hey, wait a minute, everybody, look, there's a movie coming out every time there's an outbreak coming out. Well, you know, this is referred to as predictive programming. A lot of people have picked up on this, you know, that it's out there in the alternative media sphere. But it's like, man, I mean, come on. Isn't it time we start, like, looking at this every time something like this comes up? Because then we can understand that we're living in a scripted reality here, which, like, you know, my analogy about the corporate culture, like an organizational culture in a corporation, it's like, you know, hey, everybody, we're going to move these offices to the second floor, and we're going to take these cubicles and we're going to set those over here where the water coolers and crap used to be, and then we're going to move this stuff over here. And then, oh yeah, and another thing, when you come into work, you're going to need to thumb scan in. We've upgraded our new system. And also, if you want to go on vacation and you want to fly, be sure you get all your shots up to date, because you won't be flying unless you have all your shots. See, that's the corporate sets all those rules, and you just do it if you want your job. Same thing with in the wider structure of the ranch. So that's the way I look at it. Maybe I'm totally nuts, but yeah, as far as what's going on, and they can kill X amount of people to carry it off, because, you know, you run to the doctor, give me something to help my, because I got a cough. Well, you got the corona, and they give you something that, you know, takes you out, which is, doctors are the number one killers according to science, peer-reviewed studies. Barbara Starfield, I talked about that before multiple times. So that's how the population reduction is going to, in my mind, you know, you don't need some big scary body stacked up like cordwood event. It's more subtle than that. It's just to get you. It's a problem, reaction, solution. The Hegelian dialectic is just ongoing. It's continually, we're continually confronted with the problem, reaction, solution. We're given a problem. The solution is already predetermined way before the so-called problem. I was going to go into, and maybe I'll do this on the next call, Lord willing, is that how Trump plays into this, because I think I might have hit on something with a lot of stuff that's coming on down the road, like was going to be the ultimate vindication for the so-called Frankfurt School and the leftist postmodernist school of thought. Is this it? I don't know, but Let's do caller inners, because they're calling in and they want to talk on the Hoaxbusters call. I want to do a ad. Didn't have any donors this week, I don't think. The donor I got last time was, let me double check my benefactor roll call, make sure nobody gets left out. As it loads. Come on. Tom Hansen, $25. Matthew Sims, $25. And just previous to that, had Daniel Neely kick in $200, which is freaking awesome. Appreciate all you guys very much. And this is going to go towards my program in different multiple ways, some things that are shaping up that I've been running my mouth about, as far as like being able to travel, getting my rig squared away to do that, where it's like more suited to where I can do the calls remotely, because that was like, I was held up from, I was talking about doing that, but it was pending getting it all, because I got it mostly. Let's go to a commercial. This will go out to the donors, and then we'll take caller enters, and I'm going to pick an ad. I want to pick something that hasn't been played in a while. man, there's so many. Did a lot of ads back in the day. This is one of my favorites. I like playing this one, even though I made a play this not too long ago. But here we go.
The following is a paid message of the Transliteracy Fund. The Transliteracy Fund is a nonprofit organization aimed at the educational development and awareness of transliteracy. The Transliteracy Fund is made possible by donations from foundations, private donors, and listeners such as yourself. For more information on how to donate, go to transliteracy.org today. We live in an age of transitions where the only thing you can rely on is constant change. That's why at the Transliteracy Fund we are promoting Transliteracy Awareness Month. What is transliteracy? Transliteracy is a medium of personal identification that is non-conforming and non-binary, used in communication with other people in conversation. If a person who identifies as transliterate were approached by a server in a restaurant and asked if they would like coffee or tea in a more transliterate-aware world, the server would be aware of the possibility of the person being transliterate. Therefore, if the person said coffee when they really wanted tea, or tea when they really wanted coffee, the person who was identifying as transliterate identifies as transliterate, therefore making it okay to ask for tea when they really meant coffee, or coffee when they meant tea. The server would then be aware of this because they would be transliterately aware. When you identify as transliterate, coffee can sometimes mean coffee, and tea can mean tea, but sometimes tea can mean coffee, and coffee can mean tea. Another example would be a group of friends are having a conversation about sailing. The conversation quickly digresses to the subject of food. The person in the group who identifies as transliterate would not have a distinction between the subject of sailing or food. The people within the group who do not identify as transliterate would not feel a need to correct the person when they kept talking about sailing in regards to food after the subject had changed. This is transliteracy. It literally means that hamburgers and boats have no difference between them subject-wise. And in a transliterate tolerant world, people would not feel the need to correct somebody when they were referring to a boat as a hamburger, because a boat is a hamburger, and a hamburger is an apartment building. An apartment building is also a French chef. That's transliteracy. If you feel you might be an individual who identifies as transliterate but does not have enough information, or you just want more information on transliteracy, go to transliteracy.org today.
Okay, yeah. I would prefer, if you're going to donate to Hoaxbusters Call at hoaxbusterscall.com. There's a donate button on the side. And I will forward some of that to the Transliteracy Fund. Let's bring on Square Circle into the arena 1-2. How's it going?
Check 1-2.
One,
good,
two, check.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad I got that off my chest, so to speak. No pun intended. No pulmonary references intended. But yeah, I mean, that's. I don't know. Did you hear the list? Right, exactly. Do you know that you're probably going to be required to get a. This is what I heard, too. Is this really going to happen? I think, yeah, it's pretty much a given that they're going to be pulling stuff like this. It's like, oh, to go to fly now, you're going to have to get vaccines. Holy smokes.
Yeah, and you thought taking your shoes off was bad.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, it just, it yeah, because that's what, you know, they'll say, oh, that's slippery slope argument. You know, it's like, no, not really, not when you're seeing a clear agenda to always push the envelope and progress things further towards being more and more just an outright full-blown domesticated animal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing I was thinking about this week is just how it's pretty mind-blowing, like, how fast the fear is being ramped up, you know? Just, like, it's basically everybody's talking about it, even though nobody's actually seeing it, you know, firsthand kind of thing. So it's basically, it's just like a TV show, right? But the thing is, it's like people are buying into it pretty hardcore. But it's so interesting how here they are pushing the fear as hard as they can, showing people pictures of the empty shelves. They're talking about supply chain disruption. And then they're telling everybody, you shouldn't hoard essentials. It's like...
Right.
Okay, so which is it? You know, I just love it. It's like basically, it seems like it's just part of pushing all the cognitive dissonance, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting that, of all things, like, why would people be rushing to... I don't understand why people are buying up toilet paper. Like, what exactly is the deal with that?
Well, I think it might just be part of the advertising campaign, you know? Like, basically, coronavirus was brought to you by Charmin, you know?
I was thinking that, too, yeah, because could that possibly... I don't... Because I was thinking, like, okay, so people... There's definitely people in the know and are aware that, okay, this is a scam. They may not think that, oh, viruses are fake or whatever. I don't necessarily... My personal opinion on that, as far as it goes now, it's like viruses are real, but they're not pathogenic. They don't cause disease. They're present there, but they're
right,
it's an after.
Right.
It's kind of like heart disease and cholesterol. It's like, yeah, it's there, but it doesn't have anything to do with the cause. Like the idea that there's people in the know, and it's like, hey, you know, if you get a heads up, you can get in on the good, you know, tips to invest. And then, like, and then this one was like, yeah, for people in the know, invest in toilet paper, and then you're
right,
gonna cash in,
right?
Because it's like, you could have a large swath of people that know. Okay, yeah, we're gonna do a pandemic drill. That's gonna, you know, but we're gonna tell the public it's real because we don't want like some non-genuine reactions. We want to gauge people's genuine reactions because we need this for the drill, and it's, you know, noble. It's for a noble cause. Because I talked about that noble cause corruption where, like, people get in this mindset, and it's like, the ends justify the means. You know, deception, whatever it takes, and they'll do it. And it's like, that's clearly present within our current, you know, system. That's definitely the position. It's like, yeah, well, I'll, you know, lie as much as you need to or however you want, because if it's for a good cause, it's totally justified.
Oh, but, totally.
But yeah, but quickly, I was gonna just finish up the point about toilet paper. It's like, yeah, if like that way you can control, like, okay, because a lot of people can be aware of it and they say, well, I'll go out and, you know, invest in pharmaceutical companies or whatever, and that may not get. But if you're a real insider, you can get on the real inside thing, which is, you know, like you're talking about. They just advertise toilet paper, people start running out in droves to buy it. It's like, then there's all those people cashing in on it.
Oh, I mean, that's all you have to do is you just have to show, like, empty store shelves of toilet paper, you know, where
I know.
It used to be, you know, and all of a sudden, like, that's your advertising, you know, so the you know, nightly news at 11 or whatever goes in there and, like, lets you know, hey, guys, you're in big trouble. And, you know, the funny thing is about this, my, talking to my next-door neighbor, and he says, like, God, it's like, it's super embarrassing. I'm going to have to go down to Costco to get some toilet paper probably like next week or something. You know, we're getting close to being out. And it's like, but I don't want it. It's so embarrassing because it's like, you're going to look like the sheep, you know?
Oh, right. So, oh, that sucks like, too, huh?
So,
yeah.
So on the one hand, like for people who have like no shame or whatever, it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to buy them out, you know? But other people, it's like, well, God, look, I'm not trying to portray myself as just being an idiot, but the thing is I'm actually out of toilet paper, you know? And now I have to, like, you know, anybody who looks at me is going to basically say, like, hey, you know, you're a sheep. Well, I don't know. It's weird. It pushes you into places that you just don't want to be. Like, do people really, how many years of toilet paper do they need to hoard here, you know, on the one hand? And like, why this of all things? You know, I wonder, that's actually kind of a thing that makes it make sense, is that you are, there's probably been all sorts of other things that get hoarded. You know, like when there's a hurricane or something like that, everybody always seems to sell out of bottled water, right? Or, yeah. You know, they sell out of Wonder Bread or these kind of things. But maybe in a way, like, this allows you to do some interesting statistical analysis, because you're basically, you're pushing, like, a couple of products that they haven't used before. You know, they aren't going to be selling out Purell for a hurricane or some other emergency. This is something where, hey, let's decide we'll use a different product, and then we can see what actually happens in this circumstance, and we don't have, like, a whole lot of noise associated with what people usually buy during emergencies, right?
Yeah, so, and real quick, I'll go ahead. I'll let you finish your point.
Well, no, I was just going to say, and the thing is like, I don't get the sense that people are saying, like, hey, you get coronavirus and you're going to be shitting all over the, you know, you aren't going to have some massive diarrhea or something like that. Sounds like you just get the flu or whatever, right?
Oh, they haven't been really saying diarrhea, have they? I can see that.
No,
yeah,
you heard about it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That would make sense. Yeah, it's like the what would be a good name for the virus, and if it mainly caused the shits. Yeah, then I can see, like, a run on toilet paper. That would totally make sense. The beer, it's Corona, maybe it's the Corona beer shits flu.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I remember getting beer shits after drinking Corona. Maybe that's the association. Like, now that I recall, I did get the beer shits after drinking Corona, and people are just hearing the word Corona, and they already have that association with the beer shits, and then the subsequent run on toilet paper. This is a theory. I don't know.
Right.
But then I've heard too that the stock price on, or like, whoever is the bottler for Corona, like, their sales have went way down. That's what I heard.
Oh,
that could be a total false story. I don't know.
Is this urban legend? It's just, you know.
It sounds like it could be, yeah.
I mean, the thing is like, I think these kind of things are thrown out there basically to just say, like, this is how stupid Americans are. You know, to make people actually think, like, oh, my God, you know, I'm an informed NPR listener, and I know what's going on, you know. But the thing is, I'm not so stupid that I wouldn't drink Corona beer, you know. And so they have to basically, it's basically like creates this, like, oh, I'm a smart person who believes the official story, but I'm not so stupid that I would be so stupid to associate Corona beer with the virus, actually, you know. So I think it serves a purpose with that, like a little narrative like that.
Well, it reminds me too, like, there is these product tie-ins, like, clearly. I wonder too, like, if you were to go through the news footage and stuff like that, would you see the product placement? Like, they're showing, like, the dudes in the hazmat suit, and then, like, a Purell hand sanitizer truck goes by in the scene, just kind of, like, subtly. That would not surprise me, dude. I mean, like, because I've seen stuff just like that with stuff. Like, this one guy was on, what is it? The story was some girls that were kidnapped and put in a basement, and it was like a real sketchy sounded story. It was like, it was almost designed to just be pure fear mongering, and like, we were talking about that on one of the calls like years ago. And there was a guy that was being interviewed, and he just like launches into a Burger King commercial. Like, I was at Burger King, and man, I'm telling you, that Whopper is something else that they got. And like, and then he goes on to talk, and it's like, okay, what was that? And it was like, okay, you just saw a native ad in a fake story. That's what it was. They're doing this, man. That sounds like wild, but it's like, with this one too, like, what is the deal with the toilet paper run? I think it's like, might be just subliminal, subtle input and stuff into like a lot of the visuals and stuff that are showing people and related to this. And it's and then like what you're talking about with like the power, it's like the power of suggestion, where they start showing pictures of like empty toilet paper aisles, and it's like they've already had this preconditioning, the subtle, the subliminal input, and it's like they see the pictures and it's like, bam, I got to get some toilet paper right now. Like, right now. But yeah, and they're testing all this shit out on people, you know?
That's what it feels like. It really feels like they're just, the thing is, don't you have to assume, like, these people are looking for some entertainment, you know? And the thing is
oh, yeah.
There's just so many times over the years where there's been stuff that's just so in your face, so obviously meant to embarrass you. This might be like one of those moments, like, let's see if we can make the people do this, you know? And I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like, you know, I'll bet you a case of beer that I can get America to buy like more toilet. I can drive, I don't know, Kansas City out of toilet paper like by next week, you know?
Yeah, like, I'm writing down international master trolls.
Right, exactly. Like, this is high level stuff, right?
Yeah,
the best
big budget trolling.
I
get that impression. Yes, and I've brought this up on past calls too. Like, what is this? Because you see stuff, and it's like, okay, this has got to be just a joke. Because this is not serious. And there was a recent terror attack, I guess, in Britain on related to a bridge. And there's so much of this stuff that's out there, though, at this point. It's just crazy. But the crisis actor that was supposed to be the perpetrator, they had the camera on him too long. And he got tired of laying there and got up and took off walking. I didn't even bring that up before. I wasn't supposed to do that. That's a shitty actor. If you can't play a dead guy, then what's your hope for the future in your acting career? Like, you have no future in acting. But it's so, these things are done, the fake events are done so sloppy, and it's like, you know, I think that is part of it too, because like we were trying to like figure out like what's the reason for these being so like obvious on one level, you know, and
is Robbie Parker was that leaked? I mean, that's not leaked, dude. That's,
I don't
that's
know.
Not
yeah,
an accident, right?
Well, I do think on one hand, it's like inevitable that stuff is going to get out, you know. That's just, there's no way to kind of like completely contain that whole circus that was going on there in that town, to completely contain it. And but here's the thing too, Tom, it's like they don't need to. Like, why do they have to be so rigid and vigilant over what's going out over the, because they got the guys in the suits, they got the guys in the, you know, the heroes showing up with the semiotic rifles, the full auto rifles and the helmets,
oh,
and
yeah.
That's the story and that's the images they need to put out, and they said kids died and that's all there is to it, man. There's
yeah,
and you question it, you're a bad person, you know. They've already established that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, it feeds the fire, right? Because you got to have the dialectic, you got to have the conspiracy theorists in order to have like the official story, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
you know,
important.
Otherwise, like, basically, the fact that you have like the conspiracy theorists throwing out like these crazy ideas, like the crazy ideas are the ones that the official narrative gets compared with. And so you're doing yourself a favor. So, like, knowing how, no matter how insane your official story is, the thing is, like, when it starts getting compared to certain ideas that are, like, a little too far out there for your normies to accept, it basically, yeah, those guys are crazy. You know, I guess, well, I don't know what happened here, but, yeah, the official story sure makes a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There is a name for that. I have to go maybe research this and figure out what it is. It's like there's a, Yeah, it's like a tactic. It's something that, like, it's a, I think it's like a form of, maybe a form of gaslighting or something, where, like, you committing some kind of crime against somebody. I've heard of this too. It's like pedophiles use this with children. You know, it's like when they're in the course of abusing the children, they'll do something in front of them that's completely outlandish. And then when they go tell their parents or tell somebody, then the story sounds like, wow, this kid has just got a really vivid imagination, you know. But what they're describing is true. Like,
Oh, wow.
Because they said this in relation to, there was a famous case that happened in San Diego. I'm familiar with, because I was living out there at the time, and it was like in the news constantly. And so it was, I think, McMillan Preschool or something like that. And so they had this tunnel dug out on the ground, allegedly, and all this. And then, like, the children are, like, describing what happened. And they're saying, oh, well, they had us in a room with, like, a tank with sharks in it and stuff like that. So they were describing, like, sharks and stuff like that. They say, oh, this is clearly just, you know, their imaginations are running away, you know. So this is like, and then the end result was like, oh, well, this is like, there's nothing to see here. And that's how it kind of ended up, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But that's like, it's a tactic. And like, I think that's what's being done to us conspiracy theorists, or whatever label you want to throw out there. It's like, yeah, it's like a form of gaslighting. It was like, well, I'm sitting here and we're talking about native ads being put into fake events. And it's like, you throw something like that out and somebody's going to be like, it's going to be totally foreign to them. Just the concept, just the idea. And it sounds outlandish.
But you know, that Whopper, that sounds great. You know, come to think of it, you know, even if those girls got murdered or whatever happened to them, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's okay. And here's the thing too, like, if you're putting something in the context of something that's like emotionally charged, like that story, it has more of a tendency to like lodge in your memory. That's another thing too. So it's like a great opportunity to throw in a native ad.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. You know, this whole idea of, like, I don't know, crazy is the normal these days. It's like, I just keep on, you kind of notice, like, how these things are, if you're kind of paying attention, you just keep on noticing the contradictions in everybody's narratives, right? To kind of tie it in, I just mean it that if you accept the mainstream narrative, you're normal, but at the same time, it's forcing you into this cognitive dissonance, which you may or may not be aware of. Probably you aren't aware of, you know, if you accept the mainstream norm. It's really strange. Like, you know, I think, like, you know, a lot of people would like to see a little bit of consistency in their lives where things basically make sense. But that's not how the mainstream narratives actually work. I think they probably are intended to basically have you believing things that are contradictory, because then all of a sudden you can't be certain about anything. Because when you start thinking about it, it's like, oh, yeah, well, there must be some reason why these things make sense. I just don't know what it is.
You know? Yeah.
So you're just left, again, you're helpless, and you have to, like, just resort to, like, okay, whatever the guys on MSNBC say, I guess it's true.
Yeah. Well, I went into that with that, the skeptic with a K. I always point out that it's with a K, because from what I understand, the normal American spelling used to be with a C, and then, like, it's just recently been converted to K. So your spell checker will change it to K, which is, like, I don't know. I always thought it was spelled with a C, but yeah, I was looking into that, and they said, oh, that came about with the James Randi types and people, which is the so-called skeptic community, they adopted the K spelling, so that's what kind of popularized it. So then it changed it to the K spelling. And
the dictionary just couldn't resist the urge, huh?
Well, yeah, they have to go along with the consensus. But then it's like, yeah, well, that's fitting, because it's the K and being the British spelling, and the modern science is actually just a extension of the Royal Society of, you know, London. It's like, yeah, of course they're going to, the so-called skeptics are going to be skeptics with a K. But, but yeah, that's another subject that's like been kind of eaten at me. It's like after that debate, because the guy was like just, you know, going with the logical fallacy, the appeal to consensus, and something that just kind of dawned on me, you know, as I was thinking about it, was that like, yeah, he actually is right. And even though that I felt like I won the debate on a pure, you know, rules-based, logic-based level, I certainly think that I pretty much wiped the floor with him there. I believe that, because if you go to his channel and look at like what his comments are from his regular viewers, it was like it's the reverse. Like, oh, Logan, you took him down, right. You thrashed him. It's like, well, here's the thing, like, you know, he's clearly using logical fallacies, and they're listed as logical fallacies, but he, this is one thing that was, like, that I took away from that, I think it's important. It's like, well, you know, Chris, you're in the minority on your view towards science, and the convinces. It's hard not to laugh saying this, repeating it, but yeah. I'm in the minority on my view of the consensus on science. And it's like, man, that is like true and profound and retarded all at the same time. And it's like, that's kind of a head ringer. It's like, yeah, you're right, Blake. And I think you won the debate. I'll just hand it to him. And it's like, because if you're going to debate, you need to stick with the tried and true tactics, which is the list of logical fallacies, and you need to come with the logical fallacies and be unapologetic about it. And then you can win more people to, because they're logical fallacies for a reason, because they're tried and true bullshit tactics to persuade people that have been used throughout all time, you know? So that's like, yeah, well, yeah, no wonder people use them.
You're like using the appeal to logic fallacy. So, you know.
I know, that is ridiculous.
You know, it's like, and you're just doing it over and over. And the thing is, it's like, I mean, Logan and his crew, they see right through that.
Well, yeah, that's a very profound sort of observation on his part. I thought was like, well, I mean, I really can't stack. I don't have nothing to stack up against that, really. Because that's effectively the case. Mm-hmm. If you get enough people that don't believe that the appeal to authority fallacy is a fallacy, then it's not a fallacy. If, like, you know, anytime you get any discussion or debate and then somebody's going to, like, totally dismiss that, oh, that's not a fallacy. Why is it not a fallacy? Because the authority that I'm appealing to is a real authority. It's like, okay, you're obviously talking in circles, but, you know, if you can get everybody to accept that, then that's, or enough people to accept it, then that's an effective argument, even though it's totally logically invalid.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and they got, like, quote, the research to back it up, right? And so, I mean, that's all it is. It's basically, for them, it actually all seems just to come down to numbers, right? Because it's like, it's the consensus, which means we got more than you. We got more papers than you. We got the we got the numbers. Like, the blood work basically comes down to the numbers. And ethically, you know, we're winning the victory. You know, we're calling it a victory. More ethical points than you have. More environmental points than you have. More health points than you have. Sorry, dude.
Right.
No argument. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they wiped the floor with you. It's obvious. You know?
Yeah, and they can just bring it by way of total assertion. It's like, the papers are there, and they prove it. And yeah, it's like you don't have to form a logical argument. You just appeal to authority. That's the reason why it's listed as a logical fallacy, because it's not an argument, and you're not really saying anything, but that doesn't seep into, you know, not only vegans, but a lot of people out there, man, especially like atheists, you know, the atheist Darwinists and stuff. I had that conversation with Matt Dillon, honey, on his, and he's well regarded as an atheist, atheist apologist, I guess you can call him that. And You know, he was just throwing out one logical fallacy after another, just like he was going through the list and using the list as his guide to argue for evolution. And I was just pointing it out. I said, man, that's a logical fallacy right there you're throwing at me. And it's like, I'm asking you for, you know, proof or actual evidence, and you're giving me just like something that you're referring to that's written down somewhere. It's like, that's a, you know, that's a scientific claim, but how is that actually proof of anything? Because it's the implication there is like that's empirical by way of osmosis or something, which is, that's not possible. Like, you can't confer empiricism. That's one thing I never hear brought up. It's like, but that's that goes along with our system. It's like, you want to assume that you can confer empiricism. In other words, like, if I'm observing something right here and then I tell you about it, then that's the same as you seeing it for your own eyes, but it's not. It's not by definition.
You know, actually, I'll tell you why. I mean, for one thing, I've never thought about that until you brought it up, honestly. Because, like, in some sense, like, when you talk about empirical science or something like that, you're basically talking about oftentimes, you know, obviously somebody doing some sort of research with their own eyes and senses and everything. And but yeah, I hadn't really considered how, you know, somebody else reading a paper where somebody else did empirical science, that's not empirical for the person who's reading it.
Yeah, right, not for the person who's reading it, no. But then, you know, that doesn't... here's two. It's like when you go to something like that, which is pretty obvious on its face, I don't think that's really contestable, like, you know, about empiricism. But it's like, typically you're going to be met with this, like... I guess it's like a false dichotomy, where it's like, so what you're saying is that they're practicing deception by writing stuff down that they're not doing. It's like, no, not necessarily saying that at all. It's like, they are. I do believe that, yeah, there's observations going on in so-called science. And like when I was doing the rebuttal to that particular video, because I did a pretty extensive video in rebuttal because I got hung up on during the call to Dylan Honey there, I was pointing out that, yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that there's no science or no observations being done. I'm saying that, like, you know, it's what we're talking about is the interpretation placed on those observations. And that's what's being argued, and that's what's being contested. It's like, but then the fact still remains that we're not talking about because like a lot of atheists and stuff, or, you know, Darwinists and science boys and whatever, they'll just regularly on a regular basis state, well, I have an empiricist worldview, and the point is like, no, you actually don't. You're just reading something somebody else put out there. And then not only that, but you're going along with their interpretations of those observations, and calling it empiricism, but it's not.
Right. I think it's pretty important an observation there. I mean, I was thinking about that actually one day, kind of like how, you know, if you're a scientist and other people are doing things, it's like, do you have to repeat all the experiments they've ever done to basically be empirical? Or do you think it's okay, for instance, to basically do experiments of your own that, let's suppose that these other guys have developed a theory based on their observations. And then if you do experiments, you might say in some sense that you sort of observe the same phenomena, but that's not necessarily what you're studying. Maybe you're trying to push the boundaries a little further, you know. And well, I wasn't really sure whether you could say, like, I have empirical evidence of their theory being, you know, correct or something to that effect based on my own experiments, which they didn't study that particular thing or that particular phenomenon or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, in some kind of, like, if their theory wasn't basically correct, my results wouldn't turn out the way they did, you know, something along those lines.
Well, yeah, but then
maybe that would sort of be empirical still.
Oh, of course, anything that you're going to conduct on your own is going to be empirical for you and you only.
Right.
You know,
Right. But what I mean is, like, I'm saying, like, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, Newton goes out and figures that force is mass times acceleration, you know, and basically nobody does that experiment anymore. But the thing is, like, there's plenty of things that, you know, and I get that, you know, if you're doing high-speed stuff and whatnot,
yeah,
you know, you're going to have to basically use quantum and whatever. But, you know, in kind of the low-speed world, F equals MA still works pretty good for a lot of things. And, you know, I don't know that people need to go out and do those experiments, but you can actually say to yourself, well, I know that, you know, based on the strength of this material, that somehow this stuff wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't work out this way unless that was actually true, you know, or pretty close to true.
Yeah, because it's repeatability, right, in science. That's what's what's important. It's like it's got to be testable, repeatable. And then, you know, I got articles and stuff saved to my notes and stuff that, they conducted a study, which is like, you know, which is rarely done. It's like, run the scientific method on the scientific method. So what they did is they take, you know, published papers and then, you know, randomly select them and then try to reproduce the results. Well, they did this in Britain, and like they came back with a pretty piss poor report there. It's like, yeah, it was like a low percentage of the studies that they tried to reproduce. They could only produce a small, or they could only reproduce a small percentage of them. The rest of them they couldn't reproduce. It was rest of them were bogus. But the point I'm trying to make is that, like, the way people deal with science is they go in with that presupposition strongly in their mind. Like Blake did, it's like he's already 100% certain that when he's referring to a peer-reviewed paper, then it's ironclad, and then all the ducks are in a row and everything. And it's like that's a huge assumption, man.
That's the sad thing about it. It's like, I mean, had he actually spent time in a laboratory, it would be pretty self-evident that that's not how this world actually works, friend. You know, and I mean, like, it's not the sort of, it's just kind of like having, like, an elementary school quality approach to, I mean, you're believing things that just aren't true. I mean, the example I think of oftentimes is, like, you know, you're in elementary school and they start telling you, like, how government works. I mean, and the thing is that a story about how a bill becomes law is about as fictional as anything ever could be, you know? It's like, technically, I suppose it's possible that it could work that way, but that's not how it actually works. And I think science, the way that they portray science working is very similar to that. Like, yeah, I guess it could be that way, but that's not how the sausage is made, man.
Right. Right, yeah, it's like, I mean, a big assumption.
Yeah, I mean, and all peer review studies prove that atheism is correct. They prove veganism is correct. They prove scientism correct, and they prove that eating chicken embryos is wrong and aborting babies is right. So I wish you guys would get your act together. You two are imbeciles. You're ruining the entire planet with your rhetoric and all your doublespeak, and I'm going to do everything in my power to shut this talk show down as soon as
absolutely
possible.
Well, I appreciate that, Damon. It takes a lot for giving us a balance here, because we're obviously our freaking apple cart is way tilted to one side here, to where we're about to get into the cabbage over here, and you're bringing balance to the force.
The fact that you two farmers from the 1400s wouldn't believe peer-reviewed studies, I mean, this is... I don't know. You should be institutionalized as soon as possible. I'm very worried about both of your mental, physical, and emotional health. So you're both a danger to yourselves. So there's a peer-reviewed study probably that I could do on both of you to prove that to you. Yeah. Would that be empirical to us, Chris? It'd be empirical to me.
When that hobnail boot hits you in the ass, it's very empirical at that point in time. You'll understand.
Vegans do crack me up, because the fact that they would say that they do no harm, don't eat chicken embryos, but yet they're for feminism and abortionism, or feminists aborting their children, it strikes me as very unusual, and that perhaps... I guess, scientism and vegans who rationally and reasonably can be approached also are subject to emotional appeals to reason, because it's unreasonable to say that you can't eat a chicken egg, but you can't abort babies.
Well, hang on. But the thing is that your baby is a parasite, remember?
Oh, well, yeah. I guess, yeah.
I think you forgot.
Will you send me the peer-reviewed study on that, please?
I'm pretty sure I can find it. It's no problem. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing is, it's like, do vegans slap mosquitoes? You know, like, the mosquito's, like, sucking your blood. The thing is, but the mosquito, it has its own will, and the thing is, is it wrong to do that? I can't tell. Like,
they'll say it is wrong, yeah. A lot of them, I've asked that same question, and they said, yeah, it's wrong to do that. Do they follow through?
What about locusts, like, ravaging crops? I guess, would that be wrong to kill all the locusts?
Well, they say it's self-defense to do. It's fine to kill anything that's going after your crops, because that's self-defense. Just like self-defense, yeah.
So I haven't got that deep with anybody talking about it at that level. And I haven't really heard anybody talk about... I have heard them talk about, like, they don't kill the rat or the mouse or something, that they just capture it and, like, return it back to nature.
No, they're cool with killing... They're cool with killing anything for food as long as you don't eat the animal, which is... actually an absurd position from my perspective. As long as you don't eat it, it's fine. That's a good question too to ask in the next vegan debate. Maybe I should write it down. It's like, how many animals is it acceptable to kill in the process of getting your vegan menu items on your plate? Like, how far can you go, and how much animal slaughter can you engage in? How much of that would be justifiable to get a to maintain a vegan diet? That's a good question.
Yeah, but it's totally different because it's unintentional.
Well, yeah, it's unintentional, but like you have to take the scenario, and you have to like be able to swap humans out, because that's what they routinely do. So they say, well, would that level of death be acceptable if you're talking about like school age children dying in the same? At the same, comparative numbers as the rats and the gophers and everything else.
Beautiful,
because you would have to based on their rhetoric. But somehow, it's like they get real slippery on you, and they're gonna. I think like Logan Blake eventually just started saying, "Well, I never said that. I never said that." It's like he just totally, kind of, just retreated into just denialism. On his own words. So I was thinking about, like, I don't even know if I'll even bother doing this, but I was going to take the other debate and then the recent one and then run it together, where he's just obviously contradicted himself repeatedly over and over.
Right.
And he's not the only one. It was like all of them do it.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about something after... last week, I guess, about how I was trying to make the point that veganism is oftentimes framed as basically just being the appropriate thing from a statistical point of view, you know. But and he's basically sure that veganism is the best thing for everybody. But the thing is, like, he's just referring to statistics, and the thing is, it's like statistics don't really tell you very much about individuals. And I think I kind of came up with like one. I imagine they probably have an answer for this, but it goes something like, if they'll tell you that you're more likely to have like cardiovascular problems, you know, as a result of eating a standard American diet that contains meat or something, right? But if all carnivores don't have heart trouble, in other words, like people respond differently to diets, then how would you know that veganism is the best thing for everybody? Something along those lines, you know?
Right.
It's just like, they just make all sorts of weird assumptions in here. And I mean, the other thing is, like, they're always telling you, like, what you're going to die from, but I want to know, what do vegans die from? Because I bet you there's some fucking statistics there, and I bet you there's patterns, you know? It's not like, I don't think they're claiming that they don't die. So the thing is, I bet you there are things that they die from at a higher rate than, your average standard American diet eater or, you know, carnivorous person.
Oh, yeah, it's like neurological disorders, I think, are like, I think it's undeniably higher among these, which totally makes sense. Yeah, you're not getting fats and you're not getting stuff that's that your body needs to build myelin sheaths or something is what I hear. I'm not a biochemist, right. But it does seem to make sense. So, Damon, are you vegan for the animals at this point? Did you make the switch yet, or are you still chewing on it? No pun intended, I should say.
No, I have not made the switch. Feeding a large family and being vegan, we actually went, we went vegetarian for like a month. And that was just to kind of clean up everybody's diet, kind of get back to basics. You know, during the holidays, we started eating too much sweets and all that kind of stuff. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like a month later, we kind of got back to meat and everything. So, but yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody doing that for a season, right? Going vegan or trying to cleanse their body of stuff and trying to get your body back to alkaline as opposed to acidic. But long term, I just don't see that as a sustainable diet. So, at least not for our family anyway. So, I mean, I don't care about anybody who is a vegan, but man, when you try to like force it down my throat with all the information and all, it's like bringing me all these like stacks and stacks of papers, like give me a break, man. It's stupid.
Well, you got somebody that's doing that, or do you know?
Chris. No, nobody's doing that to me, but you know, just the debates and things that I've heard on YouTube and talk to you and some other podcasts. It's just like they bring all this information like that, like that's the only thing that validates that lifestyle, even though there's no culture on earth that's ever been vegan that I'm aware of. So
yeah, that's one thing that's really fascinating about it. It's like it's all based on this presupposition that science has settled it. And then it's interesting in that, like, so it seems to be like the position is like, so science has decreed this is true, that you don't have to eat animals. And they pivot off of this ADA position statement. And I was trying to get an interview set up with one of those people, but they said they only deal with commercial interest or something. I got the email posted at hoaxbusterscall.co. It's an interesting response by them, but yeah, it's like you got this moral imperative that's based on this scientific decree. I think that's a very important aspect of this. It's like the position seems to be science has told us this, therefore we are morally obligated to act upon what science has now revealed to us. And I'm saying, okay, based on what? Based on the track record of science? I mean, we don't need to go that far back to bring up spontaneous generation back in the mid-1900s, not really that long ago, which is just pure magical thinking. Oh, stuff erupts out of nothing for no reason, just magically erupts out of maggots, magically erupt out of meat, mice erupt out of grain.
Right.
That's what they taught and believed.
Yeah, it seems like a logical conclusion that they come to, too, is that that atheism is the only way because science can't prove there is an intelligent designer. So it seems like that's also a foregone conclusion because there's no paper that can prove God. There's no science that can prove God. Or I won't even use God. I'll just say intelligent design. There's no science to prove that.
You can't prove it. As long as you can invoke unlimited coincidences, you don't have to invoke a creator.
Yeah, so it seems like they go to that, and then they also go to statism. And what you see is they pretty much toe the line on most things that come out as mainstream government information. And it seems like, too, the vegans vegans and atheists especially, it seems like they toe the line on anything that has a lot of activism behind it, like transsexualism, like even atheists. I know I was kind of getting off topic, but even atheists won't come out and say, oh, men are men and women are women. You know, Matt Dillahunty, a guy that I've listened to often just because I enjoy his rhetoric, not necessarily because I agree with him, but I do enjoy hearing him
thinking that he's one up everybody as he calls into his show. That guy, he seems to, he always like, oh, you just can't call someone a male and female. It's so complicated, you know, because he's playing subject to the activism that's in the transsexual community. I mean, I have nothing against transsexuals, but the fact remains that he won't even call a male and a female, because it's too complicated. It's a lot more complicated than that. And he even says that. He's like, you need to read the papers about this. And transgenic morphism, or I think he has a term that he uses a couple of times that I've heard him use. I can't remember what it is, transmorphic or something like that. But, yeah, it seems like they're subject to activism, and they're subject to not be so dogmatic when there's a sensitive subject like that, which is interesting.
Well, it's interesting that they, because it used to be, it seems like there was some opposition to that initially. But, Bill Nye came out for it. That's a clear indicator to anybody that that's, okay, this is going to be the new science position, because Bill Nye ain't going to talk nothing that's outside of so-called established science. And people didn't understand that. The science boys didn't understand that, because they were, like, ridiculing Bill Nye. It's like, whoa, 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 hang on. Now you're seeing, like, Matt Dillon hunting people, of course, now starting to toe the line.
I guess there's some video made by some guy, long story short, some videos made by some guy, and the guy's named Steven something, and he basically said that males who converted to female and then played sports had an unfair advantage, and I guess that got the atheist community of Austin all upset, and so they denounced the guy who I guess they had on their show at one point. They didn't know he did that video saying that trans males had a an advantage in female sports, and so they denounced the guy, and so they made the guy apologize. I don't know if he apologized or what, but long story short, so they all came out, all these atheists came out, and they're like, this is a complex subject, and a male just isn't a male, and a female just isn't a female, and they may go by a female pronoun, and you just got to be careful. You can't just, that's bigotry to say that, you know, there's males who transition to females, and you're going to keep calling them a male just because they have a penis. I mean, you're a bigot because you're calling them a male because they still have a penis, but they identify as a woman. You're a bigot. So I've heard Matt say that, and he, like, cusses people out. And I mean, I've only heard him do that twice, and I'm just like, golly, this guy, like, this is the fact science guy, and he's, like, cussing people out for coming on his show saying, hey, even an atheist came on the show, and he's like, yeah, this doesn't seem right, Matt. And he cussed him out. Actually, that wasn't Matt. There was two other people on the atheist agenda. But
oh, yeah.
Crazy,
if,
man.
Yeah, if you find, recall you where you saw that, yeah.
They're all on YouTube.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Like, that's hilarious. It's pretty tragic, actually, but on from one vantage point, it's like, I hear him too, like, debating with vegans, and then, like, he's at a loss for how to actually, properly distinguish humans from animals, and it's like, he's like, gets all tongue-tied and stuff, debating veganism with some kid.
If you have an atheist versus a vegan, like, who's going to call him out on the logical fallacies?
There you go. That's another thing, too. You can't. That's verboten. Yeah, you can't do that. Don't call out. They're the ones that are putting this out. Matt Dillon, Honey's his crew and all that. They're flooding the internet with the new revised definition of appeal to authority, which is just total insanity. It's just stupid.
There's real authority.
Yeah, assert, how do you determine if it's a real authority? You just assert it, I guess, and then you're good to go.
I think exactly.
I want to type it into Google.
That's the math when you reach the end point of science, like where everything is settled, because, you know, we got global warming, you got Darwinism, you got veganism, you got atheism, and you got transsex, and it's all settled, and we're done. And there's, like, the thing is, like, that's what's so brilliant about all this stuff, is, like, there's no more debate. The science is settled, just like as we know science has always been settled forever. You know, like it was all, well, maybe it was wrong. It was wrong before, but now we're smart, and so we aren't going to be making any more mistakes, and so it's settled. It's just so convenient. I love it. You know?
Well, what they'll say too, even vegans say this, is that, oh, it's a funded study, and it's peer reviewed. They're like, well, who funded it? It doesn't matter who funded it. The results speak for themselves. The conclusions are.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter and then, who funded it. Quit
yeah,
talking about
then
who
Chris,
funded it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that article on the blog this week talking about you know, like how, what is it, the fastest growing segment of the food industry is vegan food, you know, up to $4.5 billion or something, you know.
Yeah,
it's 4.5
billion.
The thing is, it's like, you know, so when the meat guys are doing it, it's basically just out of greed, but when the vegans are doing it, it's 100% just like, well, it's just because it's a winning diet and this is what people want.
Well, for the chicken embryos, for the baby chicks,
right?
We don't want to hurt any chicks. So
yeah. Well, veganism is just like atheism or whatever, like vaccines. It's safe and effective. That's what I think. They all just go with that. You know?
Well, it's an ism, and it takes faith to believe in it. I mean, at the end of the day, again, to Chris's point, no culture has ever, that we're aware of, has ever survived just eating vegetables. I guess you could go back to the story in the Bible, maybe, and read about the Garden of Eden and what they were eating in the Garden of Eden. But, you know, most people...
But that didn't last long.
The story. Well, yeah, it didn't last long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Point. But I don't know if it had anything to do with the food. I think it more had to do with the heart and will of man in general.
Right.
Yeah, I had an image in the hopper. I had an image in the hopper. John sent me, it was like, yeah, I put, when I post stuff on the blog, I, like people will send me stuff and I get different stuff and I schedule it out. So it kind of will post out during the week instead of like just bombarding it all at once. So that's like, if anybody sends me anything, and you don't see it show up on the blog, just wait for a few days and it'll pop up. But anyway, this, if somebody wants to go to the blog and check that out, it's pretty funny. It says, even with the coronavirus pandemic buying, because people going and, you know, panic buying in the stores, and then you see this all the shelf, this big long shelf, and then the vegan section is like virtually untouched.
Funny.
It's like, that if that's a real who would go through the trouble of staging that, though, to make a fake photo? That's got to be real. That's got to be real photo, I would think. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but I mean, and that just totally blows out of the water the idea that there's this, excuse me?
I said it's good for effect either way.
It's
funny.
That is
so. I mean, most people I know, I mean, I live in North Texas, but most people I know, they don't eat like that. So, I mean, I really don't know if I'm vegan. I know people who have gone vegan for maybe a short period of time, but I don't know anybody who's committed to that lifestyle long term.
No, me neither. I don't know. I mean, yeah, around here, Oklahoma, I've like growing up here and stuff, I've never ran across anybody that I can recall ever that was a vegetarian or vegan or anything like that. Even to this day, I mean, even with the hard push in the media and stuff, like, you'd probably be hard pressed to like find a vegan outside of a city like San Francisco or Austin or something like that. Then you'd find plenty there, but you find plenty of all kinds of bizarre shit in those places, so I don't know what that says, but
true that. Yeah, you know, it's so funny though, like when I know I emailed you about this earlier in the week, but you know, this idea of like how long it actually takes to cook after you've been eating, you know, like what I've been doing lately is just eating raw carnivore. Basically, my kids are getting sick of like me just, you know, because I cook for them what I eat raw, And so, you know, kids are getting sick of eating steak all the time. So it's like, oh, what the hell? I'll cook up something for the kids. And, you know, it's like, gosh, man, like what I used to do every day all the time. It just takes so long. It takes forever to, like, cook all this stuff and, you know, go to the store, buy these things, dice them up, clean, or you got to clean them, dice them, cook them, and then, you know, season everything and eventually serve this stuff. And, you know, it's just like, God, this takes forever. I mean, like, you know, if like you had raw carnivore cooking school, you couldn't put together like one 30-minute episode on Food Network before you'd run out of material. It's like, here's your steak, here's your knife, here's your salt, you're done, you know? It's like, it's so easy.
Yeah.
It's like all this other stuff is basically just promoting a certain kind of consumerism, you know?
I know, and then it's like, what about, what's that again?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, like, have you ever, I actually did this. I was trying to explain this to my wife one day. It's like, you know, if you go on Amazon, you cannot find a cookbook that's called, like, 101 delicious barbecue recipes or 101 great tasting barbecue. If you actually say, like, great tasting in books on Amazon, every single book that comes up is related to vegetables or vegetarianism or veganism. Because it's like, well, you don't have to say that barbecue is great tasting, right? It tastes great. Everybody knows that.
Yeah,
it's all this
point.
Other shit that everybody knows is like problematic, right? So they, you know, it's like it just kind of like it illustrates the lie.
Yeah, that we're not herbivores, obviously.
I just don't know.
That's what's great about the subject. It's just full of just hilarity. Like, as sad as it is on one level, on the other hand, it's like, golly, is not this system that we're in currently right now just the most absurd fucking scenarios, set of scenarios that have ever existed, you know? Even if you wanted to invoke a multiverse, I think you would be hard pressed to come up with shit that's more bizarre than what's going on. It's like, golly, man.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, here's a definition.
Maybe that's actually part of this whole thing. It's like we really are reaching the end point, you know, like the end point, because, like, how could you push? What could you actually push now that men are women? Women are men.
Mm-hmm. Post-logic
stuff is settled. I mean, like, when you reach the end of, like, everything, like, there's no more scientific debate because it's just the agenda. Like, what is there left? What is the future? Like, is there any future left?
Not if you don't donate to the Transliteracy Fund. That's why I played the ad for them.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need to maybe identify as transliterate, and then that will kind of clear things up. I mean, yeah, that is, like, totally tongue-in-cheek and a joke, but then, like, in one respect, it's like, that's not far removed from what we're being told today in the news and stuff. It's like, yeah, a sailboat is an apartment building, is a French chef. It's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like, what? How does it any far removed from, like, women walking around with, like, having been born with a penis, and then that doesn't compute, man. Like, it just doesn't. It's like, that doesn't, that's not even in the realm, that's not even, what can you say about it? It's, other than it's just pure idiocy, nonsense. There's just no debate. Well, and yeah, it's like, again, like, what, like you said, what do you go from there? If you get most people on board with that. It's like, okay, then we're on a damn cart going downhill with, you know, we lost one wheel and we're, you know, cattywampus, and we're going to go into an incredible ride after we get over this last precipice here. And it's like, what is there?
Well, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying there, because, like, you know, like how they say, like, this is an old interpretation of political correctness, is that it takes away ways of seeing how things actually are from being part of your everyday vernacular, because you're not allowed to say it that way. So, like, what you see oftentimes, which is politically incorrect, is pretty darn accurate or has some real truth to it. But now all of a sudden that's taken away from you. So in some sense, because you don't have the language available to you, and most people think through language, it's like you are unable to actually see a situation as accurately as you did before. And so, like, again, like, as you watch your language, you know, where a sailboat is a hamburger is an apartment building or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, that basically that probably is actually what's going on. You're basically losing your vocabulary, and you're losing your ability to actually think about what's happening. And yeah, maybe that's it. Basically, you just kind of end up with the mush. You know, it really is going to turn into Idiocracy, probably.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that has been in the works for quite some time. And, yeah, control of language, that's something that's, like, dealt with in the novel 1984. It's like, yeah, we need they had the guy, he worked in the department, and his job was to, like, eliminate words from the dictionary. And that's essentially happening. It may not be happening in the same way that it happened in 1984, the book, but it's like it's effectively happening with this one thing I've noticed. I don't know if you guys noticed too, like, it happens to me just consistently where I'm typing in a word and I'm not using big flowery words by any means, just pretty common words and stuff that it'll be flagged as it will not recognize it. It won't complete the spelling, and then it like doesn't recognize the word, and then I'm second guessing myself sometimes depending on what word it is, and it's like, okay, I'm pretty sure that is spelt right, why is it not recognized? And I go and I search in Google, and it's like, yeah, that's right, like, why doesn't it? And it's like, well, what is going on here? And it's like,
in a text message or something, or where you
in text that? In text, yeah, like texting things.
I was going to say, if I see it, that's exactly where I see it, is in text.
Yeah, that's the only place I see it, and it's like, you see that too. Then you get the same thing a lot,
yeah,
where it's
sure.
Like, yeah, and then it's like I find that sort of nudging me into the direction of like. Just making my speech real, just even more plain, because I don't want to frickin' deal with that, you know? And it's like, that's clearly the direction that they want everybody to go, I imagine, because, like, why else would that, you know, do that, you know?
Yeah, why?
It's the guy that takes the words out.
In the context of a text message or something like that, what is it that they're? I have to think. I've actually had that happen just in the last few days, for sure, at least once, where I didn't recognize some really common word. Yeah, but I didn't actually think about it that way. Like where you're saying, like, actually, maybe that's actually intentional.
Yeah, I've used the word. What was it the last time? It was something. It was like correlate or something, and it was like it didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. I was like, correlate. I was like, did I spell that right? I could check it, and it's like, yeah, that may not be the word. I can't remember, but yeah, it's happened to me. You know, it happens to me regularly, really, on a regular basis. And sometimes it even underlines it in red, like, oh, this ain't a word. And I'm like, the fuck it ain't.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I'll tell you, like, if you have to correspond with certain kids who, like, grew up just texting, and they honestly do not know how to compose an email. I mean, and I'd hate to see what their handwriting looks like or anything like that. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that it's pretty astonishing loss of basic skills, you know, just because of like what the rectangles are doing to everybody with their well, not everybody, but there's definitely a segment of the population which is theoretically college educated, which absolutely has no idea how to compose an actual sentence.
Oh yeah, I worked for a newspaper of all places, and then that was going on there, where you get emails from people, and I'm like, yeah. Yeah, and like, and then I'm getting like a email from somebody. I'm like, what the fuck are they trying to tell me here? I couldn't even parse it out, you know. And it wasn't. It's like I.
Well, it's not. It's not surprising because one of my sons had to go to public school for some speech therapy help, free, offered by the state. So we enrolled him in school, and his reading comprehension was like in the low 70s. And he had everything else okay, but his reading comprehension started going down in the 60s. So we go meet with the teacher, and we're like, hey, you know, maybe it makes sense to hold him back a grade and let him repeat. And she's like, we don't really do that here because it reflects negatively on their numbers. So they just push him on. They push him on to the next grade and make it the next person's problem. So we're still up in the air about what we're going to do about it, but... You know, my question to her, you should have seen the look I got. It was like, so if his grade goes below a 64, I mean, when do we start thinking that he's not ready for the fourth grade? And the teacher is just looking at me, and she looks at this counselor and this speech therapist who's in the room with us, and they're all, like, looking dumbfounded, like, I don't know, what would we do?
Wow.
What do we normally do? We have no idea what we would do. So, yeah, it's pretty, pretty wild. But what you find out that most parents are the ones who actually decide their children should repeat the grade. It's rarely ever.
Oh, wow.
At least in the district that we're in. It's rarely ever the school that says, hey, he needs to repeat. So.
Yeah, because they have, like, some numbers to keep up. Because they have federal funding or something?
Test scores. Oh, yeah, they get federal funding here. So. That's
probably why, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, it's set up to do that, but, you know.
And I'm sure that reflects on the performance of the teachers. Even though the student has a real issue, you know, regardless of what the performance of the teachers are, if the student has a real issue, it's like, hey, we can't flunk them because this will reflect too deeply on our performance metrics. So we can't have this.
That reminds me of something I was watching earlier today. It was like this video about this guy. He's like he's not a native English speaker, and he was talking about he's a comedian, and he's like talking about the difficulty of the English language. And like it was funny. I remember like on the past calls, John went down the same line of thought on the word shit, and it was like so. This guy goes into a whole discourse on the word shit. How it's used in the English language. Like, yeah, you can be, if you're referred to as a piece of shit, that's kind of like a low esteemed, this is derogatory, obviously. But then, like, when people really like you, they call you the shit. It's like, before then, you could be a piece of shit. You're never a whole shit. You're always a piece of shit. But then, like, if you're the shit, you're actually esteemed. It's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, that's like the English language is like, I can imagine it, like somebody that's not familiar with it, it's like totally confusing.
If there's a big difference between being a steaming piece of shit and a esteemed piece of shit, just note.
You can be an esteemed piece of shit or a steaming pile of shit. That's another one.
You can be a steaming piece of shit versus an esteemed shit, as you were saying before.
The English language, man. And like spelling too, it's like pretty crazy. Oh, the title of this is ISMO. I don't know shit from ISMO. I'm not familiar with the guy, but that's pretty funny. Routine on the YouTube. Like the word Wednesday, like who come up with the spelling on that word, man? You know? Like how do you get the, because of Wednesday. I always like looked at that word and I said, what the hell is going on with this word, man? Like the spelling of it. And then what's funny too is like people Wednesday, like the day of the week, Wednesday. Like how do you get that spelling? Like what kind of irritating. Like, and then, like, yeah, you spell that word wrong, people, if they know the word, how the correct spelling goes, they'll jump your shit. You know what I mean? The English language is like all cocked up, man.
It's a memorization exercise.
Yeah, it like it favors people like the whole school system and the learn and the it favors people who can are good at rote learning, like parroting shit and regurgitating shit that's told them, and they can repeat it back. And it's like clearly that's freaking conditioning, man, for mind control. So I remember like that in school, like I would try to engage, you know, especially like females, I'm trying to talk them up and whatever, and then like trying to engage them in some kind of a conversation. And like, so like the smart girl in the class is sitting near me and I'm like, I'm trying to chat her up. It's like, and then she's like going into some stuff and it's like, man, I don't know. She doesn't seem very smart at all, but she's making straight A's. I was like, I just remember like being kind of that being kind of a letdown. It's like, like she's not really smart.
I mean, academia is a discipline in and of itself. And going back, kind of doing full circle here, isn't that what all the peer review studies are? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of peer review studies in other languages. I mean, I'm not saying English is the only language peer review studies are in, but it seems like that the West in general, from a scientific perspective, sets the bar for the disciplines of science in the medical field, nutrition field, you know, astronomy, geology, you know, strata. I mean, it seems like that with our language, I say our language, the language that we use, English, it seems like that we set the standard for that. So it's not surprising that all these peer-reviewed studies, they use English basically to word up all the conclusions and the rhetoric of all these studies. And, you know, you'll go through, I've seen a couple of videos by Vegan Games where he'll go through and he'll be like, oh, in this study, it says eggs could kill you and cause cancer and are carcinogenic. And he only highlights like that one little piece of that,
good Vegan
like
Games.
2,000 pages in the study.
Yeah.
And he highlights this like one little piece and you're like, oh, eggs are bad for you. Okay, Vegan Games. Yeah, I see that. You highlighted it. Okay, thanks. You know, like he read the whole study for me, so I don't have to. And he basically takes all this rhetoric and just highlights this one little piece, and like these words mean so much to him. Like it completely changes his life. I mean, I don't know this guy. I mean, I'm just saying though that like he's hoping to evangelize everyone with this study that has this little highlighted portion in it, and it's very wordy. Like, I mean, there's a lot of words in there. You kind of have to be a scientist to even kind of know what they're talking about.
Right.
It's not like you can pick the study up and even really understand what it's saying unless you really get into it. And this is just one study, right? This isn't you're not reading a book about multiple different things. You're reading one study about the effects of eating a certain amount of eggs in a certain amount of time span with a certain type of lifestyle. No one even knows what the lifestyle really is. No one knows if these people are getting the right amount of sleep or whatever. They're just saying, oh, no, there's carcinogens in these eggs.
They call them confounders the variables. It's like, I went over that with Blake there, and they're looking at people whose diets have got all kinds of shit in their diet, you know, processed food and everything, and they said, oh, they account for that, they run calculations or something on that, and they account for all that. I said, are you kidding me, dude? That's what he actually believes. They can sort that all out with running some calculations on it. That's ridiculous.
But the point is, though, is that the all that information that's hidden, I wouldn't even say it's hidden, I mean, it's right there on the paper, but all that information that's confounded and all these words, you know, who can even process all those words to understand that that's exactly what the study means and says? Just because Vegan Games goes and highlights it, you know, is that really what the ultimate conclusion of the study?
And was that even the focus of the study to start, or is that just something that was mentioned? Hey, we think there's carcinogens in these eggs, by the way, but the study was about something else. I mean, who knows? But I was just bringing that up because language seems to be an effective use to attack people's reasoning and intellect to dissuade people in a certain direction of belief. So, and you know, well, it doesn't take much, apparently, for the masses. Yeah.
It's all about presentation.
I think the vegan gang thinks like hemlock isn't as poisonous as they say. You know, it's like there's probably an agenda here. I mean, just guessing, right? I mean, the thing about this, like all this peer reviewed stuff, is like basically you could replace the phrase peer reviewed with like circle jerked, you know, and it would basically be the same idea. But the thing is, it's like a different context, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, that's actually what this is, you know.
Or what it actually is. You're taking two logical fallacies and you're combining them together, like the appeal to consensus and the appeal to authority, and that's peer review.
That's perfect. Oh man, that's a gem, dude. Yeah. That's so beautiful. That's absolutely exactly right, man.
It's just a disguised fallacy. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it sounds important, but
disguised fallacy.
Yeah, I mean that's actually what it is in reality. If you break it down.
Yeah. Hey, but more fallacies is better if you're a vegan. So, you know, because more is better of everything, you know.
Yeah, double down on it. Double your pleasure, double your fun. Just add two negatives will give you a positive, or is that, where does that work out in any particular arena other than debate?
Well, if you drive around, you kind of discover that you can make a left-hand turn by making a certain number of right-hand turns, you know? So, it does work out sometimes.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. But, a lot of logic doesn't seem to work out the way that they hope it does, or what they think they're doing. Yeah, I don't know.
I think really what it is, what it amounts to, we're talking about this stuff, it's like with the atheist community and now with the vegan community, especially because like the atheist community sort of had its heyday, I think, in the around the early 2000s, leading up till 5 years ago or something. Or they sort of like imploded, like just, you know, a lot of infighting and a lot of just ridiculous stuff among the so-called community. It's an interesting history of that. There's a guy who did a video on it. I'm not sure if I posted that or not. I should. But yeah, this is going into the history of atheism on the internet and why it sort of like collapsed in on itself for the most part. I mean, it's still around. And then now you see the same thing sort of happening with this veganism, where it's just devolved into just them fighting, all the vegan YouTubers fighting among themselves. Like it's.
Oh really? Wait. Oh, I actually had no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty typical now. Is like where if you go look at like Vegan Gains videos, like just kind of peruse through them, and then take note of like what percentage of them is he spending time ripping into other vegans? Like it's quite a bit.
Whoa.
Same thing with like a lot of the other ones, because they're all a bunch of narcissistic arrested development adolescent individuals, you know, there's basically kids, you know, arguing, you know, little spoiled brats. Who else is going to adopt that philosophy, man, unless somebody's like pretty seriously sheltered throughout their life, you know, for whatever reason? Either live in, as an urbanite from their, you know, as a, from the time they were born, and or, you know, being like an only child or something. Like, who's, what's, what life circumstances are going to lead them to take an adversarial position with like the overwhelming majority of people, and then do it in such a way to, that's perfectly fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying, like, but to do it in a way where, like, you are coming across as entitled, and then demanding in so many words that people, everyone conform, and then have the establishment clearly on your side, and at the same time taking the position as you're some sort of marginalized, put upon minority group. It's like, right, who does that, you know?
Right.
It's mental, right, mental illness.
Well, don't the vegans divide over the same thing everybody else does? Republican, Democrat, Catholic, Protestant, Islam, Christian, you know, feminist, non-feminist, trans right, don't believe in trans right, you know, I don't know, single-use bathrooms versus male-female bathrooms, or I'm sorry, unisex bathrooms, single-use, I don't know what a single-use bathroom is, unisex bathroom, I mean, flat earth, I think they all divide over the same things, and they have to, like, if you're not a statist, vegan, scientist, who believes in transgenderism and feminism, it's like you're denounced. Oh, and you can believe all the moon theory. Well, we went to the moon, you got to believe in that too. You're pretty much, that community will denounce you. So that's what it seems like to me.
Wait, which community?
Believe in moon landings and, oh, the vegan community.
Oh, right, yeah, you can't be a conspiracy. You can totally be a conspiracy theorist in the vegan community, as long as it's like a, there's like a worldwide conspiracy that's centered around like farmers and ranchers for some reason, like that's, and then they got, they tricked everybody into eating meat, like with marketing, meat marketing, like I guess in the, yeah, whenever that started. Prior to that, everybody was a happy, healthy vegan.
That seems to be how they toe the line, exactly.
No, that's what they believe. Well, that's what they say, yeah.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. What was that video that came out a while back, about 4 or 5 years ago, with the cows in it?
Cowspiracy. They call it Cowspiracy, yeah.
Yeah, Cowspiracy, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Blake said, too, on the last. He was saying, yeah, conspiracy theorists don't focus on the real conspiracies, which he was suggesting that the real conspiracy is the Cowspiracy. And,
the Cowspiracy, yeah, the methane gas and the going corrupt and the earth is overpopulated.
Because marketers trick people, convince people to eat meat, to get the meat industry rolling so they can make profits off the degradation and the exploitation of poor helpless animals. That is the story, man. I'm not joking around. I'm not exaggerating. That's how they're positioning this. This is no joke. This is what they're actually putting out there and suggesting. And they are actually saying, they are actually suggesting and inferring that previous to modern day, you know, big agra with the animal, you know, prior to them, you know, advertising to everybody, like, I guess the idea is like people typically ate very little to no meat, and they were tricked into, you know, making what we have today with the factory farming and all that through advertising, and mankind throughout history have primarily have existed on nuts and berries and tubers. And I'm serious. This is what they. This is what their ideology is starting to incorporate this into their talking points and everything. Because they know that they're losing the debate on the current established view of how mankind existed prior. So they're just revising history. Because that's fine to do, you know, you just do whatever in the name of saving the animals. Noble cause. It's a noble cause. So it's, yeah, ends justify the means. Yeah, so you can totally ignore that B12 is an issue. It's like, well, yeah, we're telling people that they need to supplement it. Some vegan doctors are telling them not to do it too much. Some of them are saying that B12 supplementation is fine. Others are saying that the supplementation is inadequate. They've done studies and they've shown that people are accumulating too much. Some people are advocating backing off. And then there's a whole other big segment of vegans that say, oh, don't worry about it. You don't even need to supplement it. But then it's like, here is something like a deficiency that's obviously higher in people who aren't getting it from food sources, which that should be uncontestable. For some reason, it's not. You can just bypass all that. This is something that they say from nutritional science. And it's like, oh, here's Chris the hypocrite. Quoting nutritional science when he said he didn't believe in it. No, this is what they say. And I point this out often. I said, that's relevant to their position. It's not relevant to my position. So when I point out the contradiction, it's not on me. It's like, I mean, it's real simple to understand that. It's like, I don't necessarily have to buy into all that. But it's like what they say, that this will cause permanent damage for the rest of your life if you go B12 deficient. There's no coming back, is what they say. Once you go deficient, you are effed for life. And they're playing with people's lives with this shit, man. You know what I mean? And they're just very, just cavalier about it, nonchalant. Oh, he take it or don't take it. Or got this crazy chick that's eating raw vegan. She's been doing it for years, and she's like, was saying, telling these in her target audience is young and fresh. Her name is the raw Christina or something. And she's like telling the young girls that are mainly her primary target audience, like, oh yeah, V12, you don't have to worry about it, blah, 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 blah. And then she's recently changed that. And then, but for years, got away with telling, oh yeah, you can just eat raw fruit and vegetable and no B12 supplement. You don't have to worry about that as long as you're eating good. Just insane advice, according to the establishment. It's like, you better damn take your B12, right, according to most of them.
You know what? But the thing is, it's like, if you start spreading misinformation about coronavirus, go to jail. Because, I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're talking about. They can talk, the vegans can talk about whatever the hell they want. They can make up all sorts of bullshit. But, coronavirus narrative, you're screwed. Serious. Like, I saw some stuff saying, what is it? Like, we ran across something that was talking about making it illegal to voice opinions about vaccines that are not part of the official narrative in the UK, for instance.
Oh, where you can go to jail, huh?
Yeah, seriously, I could find, it was like some BBC article or something like that where some person in the government there was talking about that. It's kind of interesting how they're so selective about what information is problematic. I mean, we're talking about health issues either way, right?
Yeah.
Well, just go
right
back to Chris,
public health,
the B12 thing. I read the Gerson therapy, and the Gerson therapy book. It said that basically on a vegan diet, you would need to supplement B12. You need some type of liver shot. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have to go back and look at it. And then the other thing they said is that you would need coffee enemas to stimulate bioproduction to help you process all the fiber that was going into your body from the vegetables. So,
yeah.
And that was also to detox your body so that the fiber didn't hang around and start building up toxicity again in your body. So there were those three things were imperative that if you did go on a vegan diet, that those things are imperative to stay healthy on a vegan diet long term.
Yeah, well,
I can't remember the exact liver injections they were taking. I don't recall. I'd have to go get the book and look it up if I still have it. A couple people have borrowed that book from me, so I'm not sure I still have it. But
there was raw liver juice in Gerson therapy in the old days.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, they determined though that eating all those vegetables, that those two things you pretty much had to have as a staple in your lifestyle. So, if you were vegan, I read the book because my aunt got cancer and I just wanted to show her alternatives besides getting chemo.
How old was the book, or do you know what version it was? Like, was it published prior to like the mid 80s?
I bought it in 2007 or 8, probably.
Uh-huh.
It had the lady was on the front of it. I guess it was her dad.
Charlotte.
She wrote the book. Yeah, Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlotte. Charlotte, exactly. Yeah. She's a vegan.
Yeah. But she's also substituting, right? She's doing B12, liver injections, and she's...
Right, but this is the thing, is though, that she, if you look into the history of it a little bit, and I'm not super deep into it, but I kind of have a little awareness that she kind of reconfigured the therapy such that it went from having, because she was a vegan and she was like, well, you don't need to be eating the liver. I think that she was the one who actually removed the raw liver juice from some of these cancer therapies. And the thing is like when the old man was around, he was quite successful, but when she took over, they were no longer as successful at treating cancers any longer. So just, you know, the juice plus the liver was pretty good, but the juice minus the liver was not as good. That was kind of my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I had to go to the... Yeah, I had to step out to the restroom real quick. You guys were talking about the liver in the original Gerson therapy. You're telling me about that, Tom.
Right.
Man, I'm glad y'all brought that up because I wanted to go into that. And then that's no longer prescribed, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things that just kind of got brushed aside because I think, you know, Charlotte had the opinion that, it wasn't necessary. And, you know, she just, you know, what can you say? She doesn't have to have exactly the same opinions as her father or anything, but, you know,
right.
The unfortunate thing is that the evidence doesn't seem to get in the way of the practice. You know, it's like, my understanding is that the old man would take, people who were really destroyed in by cancer or by, you know, the therapies that were used to try to treat cancer, and so people would come in on their last leg, and he would still occasionally, you know, I shouldn't say occasionally, but pretty regularly be able to bring these people back, you know, get them past that cancer just through this pretty intense dietary regime. But Charlotte essentially would not take... If somebody had actually been through chemotherapy, she wouldn't even bother taking them as patients because she had such a low success rate with people who were, you know, already been down that road that far. So maybe she was effective on people who kind of caught things relatively early and didn't fall prey to the medical system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, that's one thing you could maybe point to and say, hey, you know, this is... because I read pretty big part of that book, the Gerson therapy and all that, and I was on board with that years ago. I started like doing a lot of juicing and stuff, and I've since totally reversed my opinion on that, because I think it's like when you talk about the health community and like health food stores and stuff like that, like Gerson therapy is like a one that's like really promoted out there, like it's something that like everybody pretty much that's into health or fitness or alternative anything is going to be familiar with mm-hmm. Gerson therapy. So it's like something that is like I guess what would be the equivalent, kind of like the mainstream alternative. I guess that's the word. Mm-hmm. Like that would mm-hmm. be part of that. But the ideas that was put out by Ajanus von der Planitz, Seems to get, in comparison, short shrift in comparison to the Gerson therapy. Now, the von der Planet stuff is like going into, you know, carnivory and stuff like high meat and emphasizing like things like raw butter, unpasteurized milk, you know, raw milk. And the Mayo Clinic is a you know, famous name in health, and it's an establishment sort of icon. And they the original protocol that was administered in the Mayo Clinic was strictly raw milk. Oh, what's that again? You're gonna guess?
You were gonna say it was. I thought it was gonna be eggs and oil mixed together.
Eggs and oil,
mayo. But maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, right on. Yeah, I was slow on the draw on that.
But no.
Mayo cure. Mayonnaise is actually the cure for most disease. That's the takeaway. But well, I mean, you know, it might as well be. I mean, like, you know, some kind of animal product. But anyway, yeah, raw milk is what they. So that you'd go into the clinic. And you would have whatever it is. They listed off this. Yeah, I posted the article on that. It's interesting to look into. There's some books on the subject. Yeah, raw milk was like, that was the only thing they gave you, too. You go in the Mayo Clinic, all you're getting is raw milk. And they give you like a gallon or, I forget the quantity. But you just take some bed rest, get some raw milk. You stay in there until you heal up, which that's incredible. Makes a lot of sense to me because I've been drinking raw milk now, like on a regular basis for a while. And it's like every morning when I get up, I'm in a good mood. I'm ready to go. I'm not going to sit here and say that I got these bursting high energy levels because I don't. But it's like I feel calm in my mind. Able to do a task, not like overflowing abundant energy, because I don't even think that's even normal. I mean, like, people describe that, it's like, man, I don't even think you're on the right course if you're you know, jumping out of your skin. It's like I mean, just like a calm, good, be able to, I'm able to focus on whatever I want to do, sleeping good. Yeah, that's one thing that drove me crazy about the debate. It's like, oh, you can't go by how you feel. It's like, how do you not go by how you feel if you're determining your health?
Right.
Your metrics, you know, what are your metrics for determining if you're healthy or not? You mean to tell me if you got the flu and you're coughing and your nose is running and you got diarrhea and you got phlegm coming up, then you still don't know you're sick because you're going by how you feel, right? There's no metrics. There's nothing to gauge it from. How do you know? Oh, you're going to go off how you feel, ain't you? It's like, man, it's ridiculous.
We don't accept that N equals one. There's no consensus on N equals one, man.
No, that's right. But that's the deleterious thing about this whole thing. It's like so damaging. I wonder if that word would come up in my spell check, deleterious. No, it doesn't do it on my laptop or any other computer. It's only on the phone. That's interesting. Can't the phone, in the phone, fast enough to spell check? I give it time to check it.
I don't know.
It bothers me.
Apparently the phone has enough computer power to send a rocket to the moon and back in terms of computation. So,
right.
I don't know. Is that enough?
I don't know, man.
There might be an inside joke in there somewhere. I don't know. There might be. I don't know. You know, the thing about raw milk is that I used to buy it from time to time, but not consistently because it costs like four times as much as regular, like, organic whole milk, right? Maybe, but I actually just find it like, wow, it is what people have said. Like, basically, if you thought that you had any allergies to milk, you got to start
all the dairy that you have ought to just be raw, and then find out how you feel when you eat raw dairy. And it's just like, oh yeah, it is not the same thing at all.
It's not the same thing, because people will judge it by that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I actually, I make my own yogurt out of raw milk, and the yogurt is never heated at all, you know, so basically, other than just to, like, keep it in a warm place that gets it up to maybe, like, you know, 85 or 90 degrees or something like that, so it's definitely not up to the point where you're destroying the structure, I think. It's below the body temperature of the cow, probably, you know, so it's just such a outstandingly better product than stuff that's made out of pasteurized milk. It's just crazy. It's so delicious. It's so interesting that, God, just heating that stuff up for a few seconds to whatever it is, 165 degrees or whatever they do to kill all these supposed pathogens that are in there. It does something. And, you know, but the other side of this is like, you're exposing yourself to all these dangers. And the way I've been thinking about this more recently is, you know what? If you go to a fish market and you say, hey, I want to get sashimi grade tuna,
mm-hmm.
you're getting fish that's clean. You know?
Yeah, that means you can eat it raw.
The fish market is not trying to... Exactly, that means you can eat it raw. So you're basically buying food that's much higher quality than the stuff that, you know, you have to cook, right? And, I mean, it's exactly the same with the milk. It's basically like you're buying sashimi-grade milk. This stuff is way better quality than this other stuff that's, you know... And it's like nobody portrays it that way. No, it's just dangerous, you know? Oh, yeah. It's so foolish.
I know.
I can't even believe.
It's just,
you know,
blatant double standard. It's more people die from the stuff that gets on greens, you know. That's like chicken
course.
Is number one, they say, and then the second to that is like spinach and stuff. And
right.
Oh, that's one thing that I brought up to Blake before on a separate thing. I went on his deal a couple of times and on the comments, and he was saying, oh, the only reason why greens get contaminated is because they touch raw meat. I was like, dude, that you don't even know what you're talking about. Like,
I'm sorry. If you look at the word broccoli and you basically just kind of like take the B and you erase like the front of the letter, it says E. coli right there, dude.
it's an anagram for E. coli.
Turn the B into E and get rid of the R. And yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Then you got the E. coli looking thing there. So, broccoli.
Broccoli. That's what you start calling it, Brock.
Yeah, that's what
broccoli.
It is. Yeah, it's broccoli.
Little bacteria. No, it's crazy, this stuff, man. You know, like, just a total denial. Okay, everything is centers and rotate. It just, you know, everything rotates around science. And then I'm throwing at him the established science on food poisoning, and then he just totally throws it out. Oh, no. Dude, man, like, you just... But the thing is, that's typical out there with this growing movement. Oh, shit, I hope this thing doesn't grow like they suggest it's going to. Like, could you imagine, dude? Like every third or fourth person being like that?
I think it's going to be really, really hard for them to get that far, because I think that it takes a certain mindset to get there.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, not everybody's made to give this a try, or even if they do give it a try, I think like a lot of people are just like, this is bullshit pretty quickly.
Like it's a special kind of dupe.
Yeah, I don't know.
That gets on board with it.
It takes a special kind of person. I mean, it's like veganism. It may actually be maxing out right now. You know.
Yeah, or maybe it already has. But man, I'm telling you, they're really pushing it. I just see it just so everywhere now, where it's like it's just kind of it's just all over the place. It's just popping up in like unexpected places too. You know, I'm in Oklahoma. I'm in kind of like a medium sized city. maybe a small city, small to medium-sized city, and you know, I'm seeing the promotionals around and stuff, and you know, of course, it's like this is going to be the beachhead is going to be at the fast food industry's bringing it in, put it in front of people's face, but they got it here, man. You know.
Right.
It's like, oh, we got vegan tacos, plant-based tacos, and then it's like the way that it's advertised, it's fully suggestive of like, oh, come and eat your fast food, and it's going to be healthy for you. How about that? Isn't that great? Because it's plant-based.
Yeah, well, I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but basically all these agendas are related to consumerism, you know?
Veganism, well, yeah,
is consumerism. Environmentalism is consumerism. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't change the consumerism, but you just funnel it right into like these shitty products.
Yeah, we were talking about before how like a lot of this the propaganda and the way that it's delivered has a lot in common with just marketing tactics. Talked about that before. Sure. I don't know, Damon, were you around? I think you were on some of those calls when we went into like Robert Cialdini and the in that book Influence and all the stuff it covers in there. Or do you remember that marketing?
I remember that name. I mean, I remember the philosophies that we covered. I don't remember the content specifically, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was telling Tom how like that's a good one to read. I think everybody
should be
familiar with that.
Yeah, I bought a copy of it. It just hasn't gotten here yet.
Yeah, it's worth a read. It's I should probably go back and read it again or finish reading. I read a pretty big part of it. It's in Robert Cialdini, and the name of the book is Influence, but it's kind of like he's a marketing guy, and it's kind of like one of these tell-all books where he's like exposing the or what is it, like the how the sausage is made or whatever, like behind the scenes, the greasy nasty stuff about marketing, all the psychology behind it and stuff, the tactics. Yeah, dang, definitely should be required reading in school. That should be mandatory reading for everybody, like that's you know, still in school, that haven't gone to college yet, you know, like 12th grade or something. That should be like an absolute must to read that. There should be a whole class in that for sure, if you're gonna open up your own.
But Chris, you're going to fuck up the economy.
Would that cripple the economy if everybody came aware of that, of all those tactics that marketers use?
Or would they just have to get sneakier?
Oh, they're, man, they've already gotten sneakier.
And then have Burger King advertisements during what you were talking about at the beginning of the show.
Oh, man. Well, that's it, man. That's where it's at, where it's like it's just subtle. They slip it in, and it's like you don't even know what's going on. Like, you know, next thing you know, you're the only thing you have to decide from that point forward is if you want mustard or if you want ketchup. That's the only thing you're going to need to figure out, because it's already decided where you're going for lunch.
Yeah, right, right. Well, I mean, your electric self-driving car has already taken you, right?
It's already got your meal plan worked out for you, according to your...
That's what I'm saying, man. Exactly, and you will be having the Beyond Burger, as it turns out.
Well, of course, because here's the future, too. Like, you have your phone, and everything is based on your phone and your social credit score or the equivalent. And then you sign on for a certain, you know, identity or whatever. Mine's, you know, full plant-based, you know, trans vegan or whatever, so I can eat some meat or whatever, and it accommodates me and it sets up my schedule for the day. So like it gives me a buzzer, and I just I just automatically respond like Pavlov's dog and go get in my car, and it carries me to the eating place to get my, and it has my biometrics on my phone too, like, or on my brain chip or whatever, that says, oh, I'm low on B12, I need to get a, you know, crab cake or something, whatever, and a certain particular kind of dipping sauce. But it's all, everything is just 100% plant-based. I think I'm eating meat, but I'm actually, everything's just 100% synthetic. And then,
this actually isn't, what you're describing there isn't that far away from Zeitgeist, come to think of it.
Oh, you mean like the Zeitgeist movement?
Whatever. How many years ago was that?
Was it like Jacques Vallée?
15 years ago. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, but, like, really, isn't that what they were basically, like, that sounds dystopian, what you're saying, but, I mean, and they wanted to paint everything as being, like, this wonderful world, but, I mean, like, honestly, the two things are exactly the same.
Oh, yeah, because they're talking about
perspective, right?
Yeah, they're just talking about, yeah, how the system's corrupt and this and that and the other thing, and, yeah, we need to go into a system where everything is fed into a computer and it tallies up all the resources on the Earth and allocate some correctly, and I was like,
exactly, right? You know,
yeah.
You're gonna have to figure out who gets the high efficiency toilets and who gets the ones that actually work. You know, I don't know. but all that has to show up in the tally somewhere, I guess. You know.
Yeah, I mean, how do you
and. Yeah, how does the computer deal with, like, 10 years ago when, however long ago it was, you know, when, you know, like, basically the computer, this is pretty, even the computer has to deal with, like, the cognitive dissonance, okay? So basically, you got the environment, whoa, shit, there's way too much carbon being spewed into the atmosphere, what are we going to do about this? And then it's like, GM goes tits up, and all of a sudden it's like the government can't do something fast enough to basically bail it out and get it back in business so that you can spew more carbon into the environment, right? Like, what the fuck? What's the computer supposed to do? The computer's like, I'm off this project.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what people seem to kind of like now be kind of hinting at, that that's like going to be all favorable. Reminds me of something I was listening to Jay Dyer. He was talking about moral calculus. And that's something that, yeah, I've heard that term before, but I didn't know that that was like a very sort of literal thing. Like a computation that's going to, you could throw in some parameters and it's going to give you the correct ethical moral stance on whatever.
Wow. Wow.
And it's like utilitarian philosophy based, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, like, I actually took a class in college in decision analysis that was like literally just a math class that, you know, gave you a full-blown logical approach to making decisions for problems of arbitrary complexity just by figuring out, like, probabilities of various outcomes, you know, and estimating probabilities of various outcomes and so on, and there was all sorts of stuff that you could do with it. It was like kind of a curious thing, but wow, never even considered the possibility that you could do the same thing with morality or ethics.
Yeah. It's actually precise. It's ethical calculus is the correct term.
I bet you it's related to the. It's probably coming up because of all the machine learning AI stuff, and then basically we have to figure out like what is the car going to do on the highway when it faces an impossible situation.
Well, yeah, don't they have? Don't we have to
do it?
Yeah, don't we have to bring all this stuff in to deal with the ethical conundrums with self-driving cars? Like,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We got to run some ethical calculus.
Right.
How much processing power would that take? That's why we need 5G.
I wouldn't. Yeah, 5G, obviously. Yeah. Might need 6G.
6G.
But six G, I think, is where you don't need a microwave anymore. You just set your water out in your driveway.
Yeah, and then it's like just churning,
and the water actually catches fire. Yeah,
but then everybody will just be conditioned to accept that as normal, or global warming, or something.
Oh my god!
It's nothing's out of, right?
I mean, they've been planning 5 for a long time, so I mean, 6 can't be that far behind.
Probably already in the works, I imagine. I've heard too this theory that 5G is actually. I thought it was interesting because I heard this before, like a while back, years ago. I can't remember the context, but they were talking about like Wi-Fi and the different applications of the technology of like. Well, they already have an application of this with the what they call it active denial system, where they've rolled these things out during protests and stuff, and it's like some of it's like a sound, it's like this directional sort of kind of flat dish antenna thing that sits on top of these armored personnel carrier, and they've mm-hmm. rolled these out at protests and stuff, and they typically do the sound cannon thing where it's just wreaking havoc on your eardrums and you got to disperse, but they also have the thing where it says millimeter wave technology and it heats up your skin, and they actually have this, they talk about it openly, like this is an example of something that if like you know you go back you know just 25 years and then like you bring up stuff like that and they would call you a crackpot and you're crazy and you're for talking about the military having such stuff, and then now it's like accepted and it's normal. But the idea that with this 5G they can cause you to feel like you have a fever, they could cause you to feel short of breath, like because it can affect the molecules in the air just like a microwave oven does, and it can thin out the air and stuff like that. That doesn't sound far fetched at all. And the idea that like they're using this in China to induce people into thinking that they're coming down with a flu, or you know, that it seems from everything that's provable and observable in our current system here that we're all familiar with, that is like trivial from a technological standpoint to pull that off.
I don't know who this guy is, but I remember seeing something on YouTube some time ago where, I don't know, this guy who had pretty strong familiarity with what millimeter wave weaponry looked like in the military was basically saying any school that is wired with Wi-Fi is, like, whoever made that decision ought to be put in prison for life, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Like, this stuff is, it's so much more dangerous than anybody's actually acknowledging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My theory about this is like all this stuff is going to basically be like it's going to be like asbestos, you know. Asbestos was incredibly useful, not that it's high tech or anything, but I mean it was incredibly useful stuff to have around. There's so many things you could do with it, had all these wonderful properties, but the thing is it turns out that all these people who got exposed to it end up with like mesothelioma or however you pronounce that, right? And I have a feeling like it's the same thing with all this cell stuff, is that it's just, it's too enticing to ignore, and so we're just basically going to do it until there's just some massive health thing that people can't ignore. But when that comes up, they will do their best, absolutely the best they can to obfuscate it and basically say that, you know, like, you know, it's coronavirus or whatever, you'll come up with some new thing, you know? And it'll serve an agenda, because like eventually, like no matter how these people are damaged, I mean, like just suppose, I mean, I'm not saying that coronavirus is just 5G or anything, but just suppose it is, you know, eventually the people who somehow got to the other side of this thing, they will be known as, like, the coronavirus survivors community, you know? And seriously, think about it. It's like, it's going to happen, right? I survived the coronavirus. You know, I got that back in the day. You know, it's like just as much an achievement as making it through Vietnam or whatever, you know? But the thing is like, you'll be attributing it to the wrong thing, totally.
Oh, yeah. The possibilities are endless.
But these people will be tied together. You know, there's going to be, like, the community of people who survived coronavirus. There's going to be the people who survived the whatever, fill in the blank. But the thing is like, it's what they survived is not actually what they think they survived. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. But to them, it's just as real as anything.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's sort of like a parlor trick where it's like, oh, I feel like I'm running a fever. And then you can actually, heat somebody up where they actually register a fever, and it's like, boom, you got a fever. And it's like, okay, this is kind of far-fetched, but radio has been around for quite some time. Like, what if, this is too stupid. I'm not even going to say it. I mean, too convoluted. I was going to suggest that this has been going on for a long time. I don't know. Like, but that, as far as, like, theories and speculation go, that's pretty plausible that it definitely, from a technological standpoint, I think that's definitely highly plausible. Whether or not in actual execution that it's doable, that's another thing entirely. Like, can they pinpoint you? Because I'm going around with this. I don't always carry it with me when I go somewhere. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But like, I'll typically take the phone with me if I'm listening to something and I want to continue listening to it. But mm-hmm. It's like I have my Wi-Fi thing, and then it's like now I'm looking at myself carry that stupid thing around with the phone. And it's like, oh, I got a mm-hmm. Wi-Fi, a portable Wi-Fi beamer beaming Wi-Fi at me throughout the day. That's lovely.
Well, yeah.
And I'm convenient. Yeah, it's just dousing me right now.
You like one of these Wi-Fi radiation meters, and then, you know, see what kind of numbers you get. It's a little bit shocking.
What does it mean, like, though?
I don't know what it means. I'm not sure what to draw from all this kind of stuff, but it's pretty evident that there are places where, you know, you're driving along a major freeway or something like that where there's cell towers that are on a pretty frequent, you know, pretty regular basis. It's like, holy smokes, man. I'm not sure I really want to be stuck in this spot in stop-and-go traffic very often, you know?
You can feel it just cooking you.
Well, I mean, it's like, if you have a meter that shows this kind of stuff, it's like, man, it's fucking off the charts.
Oh, you go around the meter? Yeah, I'd like to get one just to see.
You can see just...
Oh, you could see it going crazy. I was talking to this guy that installed those for a living, and he told me, he said, I would never have a Wi-Fi in my house. I said never.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I got
Wi-Fi in our house a few years ago. I just went back to having like Ethernet cables.
That's what I always had prior. But
it's not as convenient, but it is functional.
Well, it's definitely, I think, more of a stable connection and everything. But it seems like the newer technology, the Wi-Fi stuff, seems to be getting better with like the consistency of it and stuff. But traveling around too, I mean, how do you, you're not gonna have you gotta have some kind of like signal to get internet and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's got to be wireless.
You can always flip on the Wi-Fi on your computers or whatever.
Well, then, too, I can get out of the city and I can turn my crap off and.
Right.
And then at least have a break from it, which I have been doing. That's what I like about being mobile and to get out of the dang cities, man. I have to do it because I'll completely lose it if I got trapped in a city for too long. Like I'm already at the very edge right now, my sanity from being in town as long as I have. Like 2 months or something like that. I'm about to lose it.
That's all it takes, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I swear, man, if I had to go back and live in a city like I used to do, I would definitely lose it again.
Well, you just feel sorry for these guys who are stuck in the high-rise apartments or whatever in Chicago. I mean, just think about that kind of thing where you got like some high-rise building or high-rise office building, either way, you know, apartments or condos or offices or whatever it is. But just think about, well, you know, somewhere along the way somebody must have figured out, like, you know, that whatever this one Wi-Fi antenna is putting out is quote safe, whatever number that actually is, right? But the thing is, it's kind of the same way that, you know, kids are given like 50 vaccines at a time nowadays because in order to catch up or whatever, you know, it's like nobody's doing the study on 50 vaccines. They're just giving, you know, doing them one at a time nominally. But like all of a sudden here you're all in a building that has, you know, potentially hundreds of Wi-Fi antennas.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can really get a good dose depending on where you're at. Imagine, like, you get higher doses when you're closer to other stuff. And,
yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. Well, that was a good call, dude. I'm glad you called in, man.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, well, thanks.
Do
it again soon.
Yeah. Hopefully we can do it next Monday night. Same time. Approximately 8:30 Central. What is that, East Coast? It's 10-ish. Had Damon from Maybank call in. That was awesome. Hadn't heard from him in a good spell. Seemed like he had to drop off there. Probably had some youngins to tend to. Or a goat incident or something. Yeah, it was cool. Glad to hear from Damon. Glad to hear he's doing all right. Check out the blog at hoaxbusterscall.blogspot.com or just hoaxbusterscall.co. Either one. .com. Where does .com go? Make sure this is hoaxbusterscall.com. Oh, still Chinese language. Let's translate it again. Does it change or does it still say the same thing? You are not authorized to view this page. You do not have permission to view the directory of the page using credentials provided. See, I'm not authorized to view my own page because the Chiners got it. Miners got it. Let me see. What did they do, man? They took it and put a gambling site. Trying to... Whatever donors I might get are going to get diverted into gambling, and they're not going to have any money to donate to anybody, let alone me. They get on the gambling, the Chinese casino online. And then they take it off and just put this notice on here. And it's just, what is this? For no reason. Oh, well. All right, everybody. That's enough. Enough is enough. And hopefully we can regroup Monday. and we'll have some subject matter. Thanks again, Tom. Thanks again, Damon. Have a good night.